gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. It is the Stephanie Miller Show, broadcasting live from not-so-sunny Los Angeles, because it's pitch dark here, and I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph this entire week. Delighted to have you with us. We've got a very exciting week and a very exciting show. This week's guests will include Governor Jennifer Granholm, Eric Bollard of Media Matters, and more fantastic comedic and journalistic and political names than I can possibly throw at you. I'm very happy to be joined in studio today for the full 3 hours by two of my favorite co-sub-mooks. Want to welcome Trevon Free, comedian extraordinaire, who's joined me on the show before. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, John.
Great to have you back.
It's good to be here.
And in the passenger side, the legendary, the Emmy Award-winning, the Alpha and the Omega, the star of everything from Seinfeld to Lost to Groundhog Day. I could run off this guy's credits forever. The man who should have gotten an Oscar nomination for The Informant because he stole a movie from an all-star cast. Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Rick Overton. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, John. Thanks for inviting.
Thank you both for being
here. Welcome out, buddy.
Thank you. It's great to be back in L.A. I've had a very, very fun 2 weeks in New York, covering the conventions, of course, with Vice President Gore. The phones, it turns out, are turned on here in the studio, and they can't figure out how to turn them off. Good job, Tony. My first day here, and you guys can't even find out the off switch on the phone. So anyway, yeah, we spent 2 weeks in this is great. This is good. This is what I wanted. Thank you. And it would be different if this had happened half an hour ago and I'd said, can we get this fixed? But seeing that didn't happen, it's fine.
There's only one group that could possibly make a ringer that's set on off ring. It's the College Loan Board. I knew it. They're coming for me, man.
It's the teachers.
Damn,
I think it's the teachers.
I blame everything on the teachers. That's what I've learned. Yeah. If you've got a problem in your economy. Well, Scott Walker taught me that. Scott Walker told me that budget deficits should be blamed on teachers getting collective bargaining and not on billionaires getting tax cuts they don't need. Yeah. It makes perfect sense. Come on, you stupid liberals. But the last 2 weeks, I had the immense honor of covering the conventions for Current TV along with Vice
Great
President.
Great job, by
Thank
the
you.
Way.
Thank you. Well, Vice President Gore, Governor Granholm, Governor Spitzer, Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, of course, and we had special guests, including Joy Behar and Paul Krugman. And, yeah, I felt like Ringo. I was just glad to be there. You know, at the end of the first week, I said to Vice President Gore, I think this is what Jeff Lynn felt like at the first Traveling Wilburys rehearsal. You know, it's like, I get to be here with these guys.
You held your ground great, man. You know, it was like a seasoned jazz guy. You knew when to pull the sacks out of the rack.
Listen, I was just trying not to drool on camera.
Again.
That was just all I was trying to
do. That's like me being here with you guys now. I don't.
Stop it.
In this trio of greatness right here.
Oh,
did you just say trio of greatness?
Yeah.
No further questions.
For Tony Sorrentino. And by the way, folks out there, this is not Chris Lavoie. This is Tony Sorrentino, who chose him. Chris is away and keeps House Barks' metal mojo going. But, no, it was really incredible because it was sort of like watching the conventions with, like, the smartest friends you've ever sat down to watch a show with and realizing I had nothing to contribute. But it was really, really brilliant, and I thought Current really, really nailed the coverage. Having Bill Press and Stephanie Miller there was dynamite. I love both of these shows. And then having Michael Schur from the Young Turks and David as well on the floor was great, David Schuster. So it was really solid coverage, and we did 4 hours of live coverage every night. Of course, all of you know this because you were watching Current without fail. And it was really, really a great experience to be sitting there with, you know, real political insiders. I mean, what I like about what Current is doing is their lineup is comedians with Joy and Stephanie, journalists like Bill Press and Cenk, and then, you know, just powerhouse intellects of elected officials. And having, you know, Al Gore, Jennifer Granholm, and Elliot Spitzer on the same panel, it was really, really humbling. So I'm very relieved to be back here in L.A. and recovering from the bliss of the convention. Did you guys enjoy the Democratic convention?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. The first thing I noticed, it was funny, the first night when they showed the crowd, you immediately noticed the difference from the RNC crowd.
Yeah.
Like
volume wise too.
Right? It was like going from a bowl of milk to someone spilled pepper.
All right. We're gonna have our first disagreement because there were black folks and brown folks at the GOP convention. We should point that out.
Well, occasionally a fly will land in your bowl of milk. So you get a couple of specs.
Hey, listen, if I had one dream, I would be the black guy at the GOP convention. I have to keep changing his outfit every break so they can shoot him look like a new person.
Groucho nose of the glasses.
Why can't my agent get me that gig? I want to be the black guy at the GOP convention. Well, I agree with you. It was certainly a lot more diverse culturally and ethnically, but really... It was louder, as you said, Rick, and it was sort of like at the GOP, I felt like they had to get hopped up on sugar to get excited about Governor Romney.
I feel bad for the warm-up comic between shots on that one. You know? Chris Christie, everybody, who hasn't gotten a Mars bar mini yet? Here you go.
But this is the problem. That, you know, remember for the past year and a half, people have said, oh, the economy's still at over 8%. You're going to have a real enthusiasm deficit for President Obama. And a lot of progressives and liberals and Democrats and moderates and anti-evil people were worried about this. But the GOP planned it well by having a candidate that would guarantee a much greater enthusiasm deficit than anything that could ever happen in the Democratic Party. I know so many Republicans, and I'm sure all y'all do too, who are diehard Republicans who couldn't stand Mitt Romney during the primary race, and now they find themselves forced, do I hold my nose and vote for this guy who I don't consider to be a real conservative, or do I go and vote for Gary Johnson or just stay home? The answer, of course, is Republicans stay home. But I really feel for our Republican friends because when Citizens United happened, no one ever thought it would hurt the Republicans first, but he was able to buy this nomination, and a lot of GOPs in my own family are really in a bind. They don't know who they're going to vote for. Go ahead, Rick.
I don't know why really devoutly conservative Christians are voting at all when it's just a matter of days before they're gone. Why are you putting all the fight into it? Just hang out. Start packing.
Of course, you're talking about the rapture.
The rapture.
Which is a completely made-up thing that came completely made up by a British clergyman in the 1800s based on the Book of Revelation that is sort of like... The rapture's... If you read the Book of Revelation, it's this guy John, not John the Apostle. People think it is. It's not John the Apostle. It's this guy named John who's essentially tripping his face off on tainted shrooms in a cave and writing down on parchment everything he hallucinates.
Yeah, right. Like Terrence McKenna theory there. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And so someone decided this was the vision of the end of the world that's actually going to happen. Of course, what's funny about it is Revelation is the part of the Bible that actually describes Jesus as being brown-skinned. So sorry, Kirk Cameron. But really... You know what the rapture is? It's Bible fan fiction. You know these Star Trek fans or Harry Potter fans who write their own stuff based on it? That's what that is. It's Bible.
Hilarious.
It's like the Left Behind books. It's Bible fan fiction. It's got nothing to do. But the most insidious thing about the rapture is people who claim to believe in Jesus can use the rapture to justify doing whatever they want because I'm on Jesus' VIP list and I don't need to follow his teachings here in the world because I'm packing my bags for the afterlife. There's a velvet rope I get to walk past.
Yeah, bouncer lets you in.
He's all right, Letterman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's spiritual narcissism is all it is. Spiritual. Jesus himself said, ye shall not know the hour nor the day. But these guys are so certain. And it's predicted to be this fall again?
Right.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, you shall not know the hour or the day. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be waiting by the phone because you never know when Jesus is going to show up and send everybody back home.
You might already be a winner.
Well, the rapture guys are good for our economy because, you know, every few months when they expect one, they run up a lot of credit card debt. I'm officially volunteering, by the way, to take over the assets of anyone who's believing in the rapture so I can protect your money after you've gone. But, you know, it's not really Christian. And not really Christian is, I think, going to be a great theme of this campaign. Because Governor Romney, very nice guy, but you're already seeing people on the right saying some very ugly things about the Mormon Church, saying it's not really Christian. And I would submit to you that the budget of Paul Ryan is anything but Christian, and that a lot of the positions staked out by the Republicans in their platform are not Christian. And as you know, it's a pet issue of mine, but I'm really psyched to talk about it for the next few weeks.
Didn't Matthew put a little warning out?
Matthew did. Matthew documented a warning. And Matthew's the best thing of all, because that's where Jesus said, did you come and visit me when I was in prison? Did you come and see me when I was sick? Did you clothe me? And the apostles say, well, when were you those things? And Jesus says, hey, morons, when you didn't do it for the least of my people, you didn't do it for me, sucker. I paraphrase from the Aramaic. And so essentially, that's the greatest argument for progressive government. Because if you want a government that doesn't care about the poor, that throws people in jail and doesn't care about decent prisons, that doesn't take care of the sick or the needy, that's great. But don't ever say you want a government based on Christian values, because Christ was the biggest liberal that ever existed in history or literature, whatever you believe.
Yeah, but there's a clearly cut warning saying there's going to be people that follow the fake version. And so, if, I mean, in their own belief system, there's this warning.
Mm-hmm.
They're missing which part of the punchline they are in this joke. You know,
yeah.
They're laughing at the wrong part.
Well, I call them convenience store Christians because you get to go in and pick all the things you want
mm-hmm.
and leave behind all the crap.
Yeah,
so that
right,
way,
right. Cherry pick.
Right, exactly. You get to be like, oh, yeah, Jesus this, Jesus that. I'm going to heaven, but no gays,
mm-hmm.
no...
yeah,
no
you start telling God how it's going to work.
Right.
Not even there yet. And, you know, yeah, no, it's like going into a restaurant. No, I brought my own menu. This is the stuff I like to eat. Now, could I order this thing my wife makes, you know?
Well, in fairness, everyone of every religion picks and chooses the parts of their holy books they want to follow. Everyone, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, everyone's a cafeteria. A devotee. But the thing about it is you can pick and choose the parts of the Bible you want to justify being kind to all people, or you can pick and choose the parts of the Bible you want to justify being mean to certain people.
Right.
And that's the difference between progressive.
Pick the parts that are based on your personality.
Exactly.
It's going to just right. what already suits me. That's why certain political parties are designed for people who have a personality that just fits perfectly into that kind of mindset.
Yeah, and this is across
brain
the board.
Chemistry.
Across the board. You know, Muhammad wasn't like, hey, fly planes into buildings. You know, I mean, people pick and choose what they want to justify what they want to do.
Right.
And this is the problem with religion. I happen to think that a lot of good comes from religion, and a lot of very decent people have found community, mm-hmm. have found faith, have found mm-hmm. focus in their lives from religion. I'm not one of those liberals who's going to badmouth religion, because I think you can't ever measure the amount of murders and rapes and crimes that weren't committed because someone was afraid of going to hell.
Right.
You know, good stuff can come from it. But, yeah, it's always used to justify the selfishness. And with conservative
you're gonna
Christians...
You're going to get bugs at every picnic.
Yeah, but with conservative Christians, there's this mentality of, well, Jesus said help the poor and help the sick, but he didn't say the government should pick my pocket to do it. He didn't say the government, private individuals should do it. And here's my argument to that. And I want you all to call us at 1-800-STEPH-12 for the next 3 hours to talk about this. Here's my argument for that. Jesus didn't have democracy. Okay, this is the difference. He lived in first century Holy Land under European imperial occupation. He didn't have the ability to pick his own government. We do. Our government is basically we the people. And that's why if you're a follower of Jesus, democracy is ideal. Because then you can vote for the candidate who will choose to make things on earth as it is in heaven.
Right.
You can vote for the guy who's going to help the poor, who's going to help the sick, who's going to help the elderly, who's going to help make our prisons reformatories and not just cages to throw men in and turn them into animals. If you believe in Jesus and his teachings, why wouldn't you vote for the guys who want to use government to help the less fortunate? It's like these conservative Christians, no disrespect, but they walk into the voting booth and it's like the one place where, whew, thank God Jesus can't see me here. Okay, you want to nuke Iran? Good, kill all those innocent people along with the guilty ones. Oh, you hate gay people? Great, Jesus didn't say to do that, but yeah, I'm going to go with you. You think millionaires deserve another tax cut? Fantastic, it's against everything Jesus stood for, but he can't see me here? Suck it, Jesus! And it's like in the voting booth, you can drop your Christianity if you're a conservative Christian. And it doesn't work that way. If you don't want to help people, then don't ever claim you want a government based on Christian values, because that's the inherent hypocrisy with right-wing Christianity.
Well, a lot of everything is just there's people with no power anywhere in their life. Finally, one group comes in and says, I'm going to give you all this power. When you say these words, there's power in these words.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, someone to blame for the reason your life is so crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And we've found them for you, so you don't have to look anymore. And it's the same thing religion does. It says, cease your spiritual quest. Why? We've already figured it out. Just read this. You don't have to search on your own anymore.
Okay, but there's a difference between religion and faith. And some religions do that, but faith is about searching. Some right-wing fundamentalist religion is about, I've got the answers. You know, trust the
seed. That's what I'm saying. Dogma, which just shuts you down into an obedience dog mode, or the one where you continue to go the rest of your life, and it's mostly questions with partial answers that you got to toss when you find a new answer for the rest of your living days.
I find that this relates a lot to the conventions we just saw, to tell you the truth. And I want to talk about that throughout the morning. And we want to take your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. That's 1-800-STEPH-12. And our question for the day, I'll ask you all when we come back, you too, Tony, is who do you think was the biggest winner and the biggest loser of each convention? I may seem like ancient history now, but I'm here and we have some good sound bites from the conventions I still want to play. So who do you think was the biggest winner and the biggest loser from each convention? We want to know what you think. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang filling in with Steph, and we will be right back on your radio and current TV.
Oh my God, I am already having a fantastic time.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
We'll be right back.
This is the Alabama Shakes, a band all y'all should know and love. Terrific, one of the best debut albums of the year. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week on your radio, on your computer, or on current TV. And we're joined all morning by Trevon Free and Mr. Rick Overton. Great to have you both here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We are taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. And the question of the day, because it's still convention fever for me, I had a great time covering it for Current, but it's great to be here with the Steph heads.
Great job, once again.
Bless your heart and bless your low standards. I was glad they allowed me in the building. But my question for the day is, who do y'all think was the big winner and who do you think was the big loser of both conventions? I really want to know because I think there were winners and a couple of losers at each one. We'll be taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. Mr. Overton, who do you think was the big winner of the RNC and the DNC?
RNC, without a doubt, it's Clint Eastwood.
Yeah?
Absolutely. That's what I was going to go with.
He was the winner?
Yeah. I think you saw Gran Torino.
Uh-huh.
Guy who realizes he's done a lifetime of, you know, things that may not have always been what he had thought they would be when he first, with youthful eyes, stepped into it, mm-hmm. did some harm, later he's feeling guilty about it. And at the end, he just decides he will undo some of the harm somewhere else by removing himself from the equation in a strangely noble gesture. And what he did was he took the gearing of the entire convention and didn't go boom and blow it up. He just went... and knocked the teeth off by
so
1-2.
He's
just allowing Big Ben to go 3 weeks from now and blow the face off with springs into the tent.
So you're comparing Clint Eastwood's performance to Clint Eastwood letting an Asian street gang blow him away.
That's right.
Okay.
And to get them thrown in jail.
I agree partially with you. Partially I agree. But I'll tell you why I don't. Because Clint Eastwood isn't a guy who's done a lot of damage as a Republican. He's been one of the cool Republicans my whole life. Right?
That's why I think he did that.
What's
he
the
realizes
worst thing
they've gone crazy.
The worst thing he ever did was ban ice cream as mayor of Carmel. I think that's the only sin he ever committed as a Republican.
Of all towns to ban ice cream, Carmel.
Ah. I think it was something a bit more subtle. I think that he did Halftime in America. I think he caught a lot of flack from his conservative friends. He produces all of his movies, and I'm sure some of his investors are conservative folks. And I think he wanted to try and make amends, but at the same time, he's pro-choice, he's pro-gay marriage,
he's totally
behind Governor Romney.
He subtly sabotaged them, very brilliantly.
Well, he certainly gave credit to President Obama on a couple of things and made the crowd applaud for him. We'll talk about it later in the show. Who do you think was the big winner?
I thought it was Clint.
Really?
I mean, when he did the line, the make my day line, I think what they really wanted was some of those Gran Torino quotes. Like, that would have got them fired out of the seats, because I remember some of those.
Take his lighter out.
Yeah.
Just like the quote when he pulls up to the two black guys, like,
uh-huh.
Things you can't say on the air. That's what they wanted to hear. And maybe whatever company made that chair, how's business not booming?
You know, you guys act like you've never seen an 82-year-old man talk to his stool before. I would say that Cal Penn, with his Clint Eastwood joke last week, pretty much guaranteed he's the only Asian guy in Hollywood who won't get a shot at Gran Torino, too. Who did you think was the loser at the GOP campaign?
Romney.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was he a good speech? Best speech I've ever seen him give?
Yeah. That's the problem.
I can't not see him as anything but a robot, because everything he does feels so robotic. Like, if you watch the way he walked out and shook hands,
mm-hmm.
It was as if he was doing the robot and shaking hands and reaching across.
Siri thinks he sounds robotic.
Right? She can't even understand what he's saying. He sounds so robotic.
Well,
but then you watch someone like Obama, mm-hmm. who walks out or walks like through a crowd, and it's
Yeah, the rap on Obama is that he's a Vulcan, but at least a Vulcan's not a robot.
Right?
We're going to be taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. We want to know what you think. I'm John Fugelsang. This is The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week, and that means one thing, a whole lot of mashups. You are listening to Whitney Houston and Cyndi Lauper mashed up. This is I Want to Dance with Somebody with Girls Just Want to Have Fun, because I miss Whitney Houston, and this sounds great. And Tony, the metalhead, is disgusted by this, right? Can't stand it.
A little bit.
I miss Whitney. She kind of
hurts my soul.
She's one of my favorite underground artists.
Come on. Who doesn't like Whitney Houston? Come on. Tony.
It's a sad way to go out.
Yeah,
talented,
very, very sad. And I grew up with an incredible, raging crush on her my entire childhood. And so I still love Whitney Houston's music. And this is a great mashup of Whitney with Cyndi Lauper. So I don't care if you don't like it, man. I'll do some metal mashups later on to please you. We're taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm joined by Trevon Free and Rick Martin. And we're talking about... What's that?
Rick Martin.
I just called you Ricky Martin?
Ricky Martin.
You look so much like him. The great Rick Overton. I'm sorry. I called you Rick Martin. That's Rickety Marketing.
You know, I'm not much of a suntan guy, as you can see. I got that Scottish skin. Like you, sir.
I'm so pale, albinos call me honky.
I don't tan, I go clear. I become a lens, and I don't burn, but the guy behind me bursts into flames. I'm like a jellyfish on the beach.
Yeah, I combust and crisp. I pinken.
Pinken.
But, of course, Emmy Award winner Rick Overton, great to have you here. And we're taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12, because I want to know who all y'all think were the biggest winners and the biggest losers of both the Democratic and GOP conventions. And we're getting a lot of really good comments. Republican Swine on Twitter writes, winners were Democrats. They looked organized, inclusive, and enthusiastic. GOPers looked anal, tired, antique white. Talisa Jones says our assessment of Eastwood is spot on. And Rocky Mountain Mike says he's listening to us on the radio instead of TV, so he thinks Nixon won the debate. So we want to know who y'all think, and I want to go to the calls because people are already starting to filter in. And I really want to know, because I enjoyed both conventions immensely. I do think the Democrats pulled off some much better showmanship. There were snafus both weeks, and I think some people managed them better than others. We'll talk about all that, too. But Joe is calling us from Washington, D.C. where I was recently there 2 weeks ago filling in for Bill Press. Good morning from our nation's capital, Joe. Joe, are you there? The Von Trapp players.
The one time we need
the Von Trapp family singer. Here we go. Joe, good morning. Put it back on hold? I never put it on hold. You know, I'm really glad I came here, Tony. This is great. Joe, are you there? Good morning. Joe, are you there?
Here, I'll fill in. I'll be Joe.
Hi, this is Joe.
All right. While Tony is figuring out how the phones work, is this it? Are we good, Tony?
The Phil Hendry Show. Right?
Okay. I do have a comment from Lynn at Litter 8 on the Twitter, and we will be reading your tweets at John Fugelsang. You have to be able to spell Fugelsang. But Lynn wrote, regarding Eastwood, he was a vehement opponent of the Americans with Disabilities Act, truly heinous attacks on the disabled community. And I'm glad about that, because the one problem when my Ron Paul friends go crazy and gaga over Ron Paul, my biggest problem I have with Congressman Paul is his continued opposition to the Americans with Disabilities Act. I love a lot about Ron Paul, but to me, the ADA, signed by a Republican president, George H.W. Bush, is maybe the most positive thing my government has done, the most inspiring thing my government has done. I was so proud to be an American when I was young and they passed this, and I thought this is what an evolved, civilized society does.
Is that the Ayn Rand in him that thinks the government shouldn't help anybody?
I think you might be right. Yeah, I mean, Ayn Rand would not have been a huge fan of that.
I don't know if you folks know that. We're talking about Golem's mom.
Precious man.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ayn gets a bad rap, but again, I have a video about this, how you can't be a follower of Jesus and Ayn Rand at the same time. I keep trying to tell Paul Ryan that.
Matthew warned about it.
Well, yeah, and I love my libertarian friends, but Ron Paul is one Gotham City acid spill away from being Harvey Dent. how are we looking? Okay, you'll control it, so let's go to Joe in Washington, D.C.
Joe.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Sorry about that problem there. I'm new here this week.
No problem. I love you. I love your comments. As far as I'm concerned, with both of the conventions, I think that that the winners were interested American citizens who watched both conventions and could see the difference between the two. Because as an African American woman, I did not see myself at the RNC, whereas I saw everybody at the DNC, and it felt good to see so many people included at the dinner table for once, and it was just also about me with the even with the speakers at the RNC. They were just so all about themselves, whereas everybody else was talking about what we needed to do together. So the winners were the American people, if they watched. For those, the losers were those who are so caught up in their own stereotypes and their biases that they thought it was better to watch Dallas with my former New York Giants.
Well, let's hear it for Joe in D.C. because our applause button's not working. What a great call.
Let's just do real applause. Yeah?
I complete school. I know, until we get this isn't working either, Tony, by the way.
Digital applause.
This is the first time Amish people are running the Stephanie Miller Show and nothing's working. I just want to, that's good. Yeah, please block the camera if you can. Thank you, Joe. Were there any points of the RNC that you liked?
That I liked?
Yeah, anything inspire you that week?
No, not really. I'm serious. There was nothing. They were listless. Even the crowd was listless. The speakers, except when they were talking about themselves, were basically listless. The only thing I really, I guess I could say I liked was how they were just so ready to spout the lies again. Mm. And Ann Romney telling me that she loved women. I thought that was really cool.
Didn't Condi Rice inspire you to check your makeup before you speak to the people to make sure there's no lipstick on your teeth?
No, but she did let me know, don't go to that dressmaker, whoever that was.
Oh!
Watch out!
Oh.
Shots fired.
Gentlemen, step out of the way. This is we cannot handle this. We just watched this.
Oh, my God. Well, I thank you so much for the call, Joe. I agree. The winners really were the interested Americans who were watching. I mean, I know plenty of conservatives who watched both, and plenty of liberals who watched both. And I
watched both.
Yeah, I did too.
I thought the winners of the RNC. I thought Ann Romney came off the best, in spite of that silly "I love women" line, which is unfortunate. I thought she gave
it was a pretty good speech.
Very good speech. Very likable. You know, I've always said she's
powerful.
A great stay at five homes mom. I thought she really, really came off as likable, and I enjoyed her fiction about how much she admits struggled back in the day when they were only able to live off stocks in that basement apartment.
Right. They got a loan from a businessman. Yeah. Same last name as her husband.
I'll tell. Yeah, Mitt had to crawl his way out of being a millionaire at birth, and it's so inspiring to hear about that.
It's from riches to more riches stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did
think. He said, Mitt goes, my father as a child didn't even have a TV set. They didn't have a TV set.
Or on the compound in Mexico where his father grew up.
That's right.
Let's not forget, Mitt's great-grandfather, Miles P. Romney, was the first one to ever self-deport. Back when our government banned polygamy, that's why George Romney was born in Mexico, because Miles P. Romney left America when polygamy was banned. That's a part of Mitt's heritage he doesn't like to talk about too much.
A bit inconvenient.
Listen, I'm all in favor of plural marriage. I watched Big Love. It's a free country. If you're going to let, I think consenting adults should be able to do whatever they want to do. And if Mitt was smart, he'd grasp onto that and start campaigning right now on it.
How can you say this about the sacred institution of marriage? I love they call it an institution. You just picture everyone there in a straight jacket, you know, crayon in their teeth, drawing their escape plan on the padded wall.
Well, I did think that Paul Ryan had a good speech. I actually got a gig writing the nonfiction version of it. I was most impressed. The real winner of the GOP convention for me was the news media, because they didn't roll over and play dumb in the name of false equivalency over Ryan's falsehood-filled speech.
Even a Fox reporter called it.
Well, she's not a reporter. That's Sally Cohn, and she's a great journalist, and Sally Cohn's a friend of mine, and she's a progressive, and she writes for FoxNews.com. Everyone should go to FoxNews.com and read everything Sally Cohn writes. Subscribe to her. Follow her on Twitter.
Done.
She's brilliant.
Yeah.
But she wrote it, and she called him out on all the falsehoods, and it was one of the most popular articles in America that week, because it was Fox News pointing out specifically lie by lie a week before Bill Clinton did it.
Get inside and hit. It's like in the War of the Worlds, Spielberg's War of the Worlds, no one could do anything to stop these Martian walkers until Tom grabs the two grenades.
Oh, yeah.
And it sucks him up the hole and says, well, if you're going to get me, I'm taking you too. And then he gets out and it blows up. But it's like you had to get right into the center to do any harm. They're too well shielded on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think...
That's what Clint did.
I don't think Rupert Murdoch wants Romney to really win. I don't think he really does.
And this is my favorite thing to talk about, Trevon. I really think you're right. I think that Fox News, and I want to know what y'all think about this in Stephland, Fox had 8 years of being the Hate Clinton Network, right? Or they began during Clinton. So they were the Hate Clinton Network. Then they had 8 years of being the Defend Bush Network. And that was fun. And now they've had 4 years of being the Hate Obama Network. Keep in mind, O'Reilly and Hannity both were signed to 4-year deals the week Obama was sworn in. hating Obama is very good for Rupert Murdoch's bottom line.
And he said that.
He said it.
I make more money if Obama's president.
He said it. You're right. Do you really? And we also know, look it up in the New York Times, Mitt Romney has not impressed Rupert Murdoch. They had a couple of meetings.
Yeah,
they've had meetings, and apparently, like, Romney was showing charts and graphs, and Murdoch was appalled that this is how you're trying to reach out to people. Murdoch's no dummy, and I don't think he's anywhere near as right. He may be a right-wing guy. I don't know. I think he just goes where the profit is.
Right.
But do you really think they want to defend Mitt Romney for 4 years? You really think Roger Ailes wants to spend the next 4 years defending a guy that most of his staff doesn't like too much in the first place?
Right.
I think you're right. I think they're rooting for Obama to win.
I think they do. And mm-hmm. Because they run such a tight ship in terms of the things they put out. We've seen the leaked memos and things like that. And if he didn't want her to write something that grilling of Paul Ryan the very next day,
mm-hmm.
He could have nixed the article, right?
I thought about that. Yeah, why didn't he let that article run? They have a vetting process.
When the liberal media gets a hold of something like that from their outlet.
Fox has good liberals, man. Alan Combs is a great guy. Sally Cohn's great. Juan Williams is about 75% great, you know, half the time great. So I completely agree. I thought the winner of the GOP convention really was Ann Romney, and to a lesser extent, Mitt Romney. I don't think he failed. He gave the best speech he's ever going to give. Mitt Romney went there with one job, and that job was to get people behind him and on his side. And I think he achieved it. The loser was Chris Christie. When every Republican in Whoville...
That's my home state, man.
I know.
What are you doing? You are not my state bird, you behemoth. But
when Chris Christie came out and gave the most self-serving convention speech I've ever seen, and we know a lot of our Republican guys were already giving their 2016 campaign speeches, right? That's what Rand Paul was doing. That's what Paul Ryan was doing, although he was being a loyal soldier. I think that's what Huckabee was doing. And by the way, if Huckabee was the nominee, he would be doing very well right now. I think he's a much more electable candidate than most of the guys they put up. But Chris Christie came out there and did not mention Governor Romney for the first 15 minutes of his speech. Did you see Romney's face
when they went
to him?
That's going to be where he loses it in debates, is he has no filter to his id at all.
And you're thinking of Mr. Limbaugh, Rick.
No, I'm talking about Romney. Romney has no filter to his id. He has no lid over his control panel. There's no lid to close to protect pushing buttons on his chest and just make him do different emotions.
C-3P Romney, yeah. Well, I think that, you know, Hal and I talk all the time about how Mitt Romney, great-looking guy. He's 65 years old, no alcohol, no caffeine, looks terrific.
I don't know if I want a president, though, who could be taken down with one spiked punch bowl. He's never had a drink in his life.
Yeah, pretzel incident is nothing, yeah.
Right, if you get in office and the very first time you've ever been drunk in your life is someone might have spiked your drink. Could you imagine the chaos?
You're making me want to vote for him now.
Oh, what would his speeches sound like once he's had a couple in him compared to... And finally, the guy's loosening up. I love the guy now. It's the life of the Republican Party.
Oh, it's Massachusetts, Mitt. He's a liberal again. He flip-flopped back.
You know what I like to do in my underwear?
All right, Steve is calling us from Virginia. Good morning, Steve. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Steve, good morning.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello, Steve.
Is this a good time for you?
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Hey, I have a basic question for you. Republicans say that they have a lock on family values, and I would like to know that when you get up in front of America being metaphors for a family, you can get up there and lie right to their faces. I want to know what kind of family value that is.
Mm-hmm. That's a very, very good question. I thank you for the call, Steve. And he's right. I think the Democrats, one of their greatest successes was how they stole so many GOP memes from the Republicans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Respect for the military and honor for the military.
But may I just add a rephrase on that?
Yeah.
It wasn't stolen from them. They didn't take it from them. They decided to acknowledge that they agree.
They took it back.
They took it back.
I won't say stole, but I will say family values. I thought the First Lady and the President's speech were all about family values. And again, it's the big difference between Ayn Rand and Jesus. And I'm sorry, all my atheists, I'm already getting your complaints. I hear you. But the difference with Ayn Rand and Jesus, and I say that because those are the two people that are really driving this campaign on the GOP side, whether you know it or not.
Right.
It's I or we. It's the individual versus the collective.
Exactly.
And that's what it's about. And that's what President Obama did brilliantly in his speech. He made it about we. He, you know, when Elizabeth Warren said, the first thing about how you didn't build that on your own, and then the president said it, and he sort of, it was taken out of context and very dishonestly manipulated, and the GOP built their entire slogan
entire
on a lie.
Campaign.
We built this in a building that was made with taxpayer funds
union,
by union labor.
Workers.
We built this.
Not unlike an infant would with the first thing they produce. In the crib. Very proud of their first product.
Yeah, but it's built on a lie. And so what Barack Obama did last week in his speech that I really liked, and a lot of Republicans are really getting on the bandwagon. Larry Kudlow was saying some ugly things about what a bad speech it was. They're wrong. It was a beautiful speech.
What is he going to say? They can't just... There's a lot of guys on the right, you know. Why won't they admit... They're never going to admit it. It's like coming out in a debate and the guy just going, you know what? You're right. My side's totally wrong. Sorry. I'm giving you all the funding money back.
But what did the president do? He said all this stuff, all the accomplishments of this first term between passing health care for American citizens and getting rid of pre-existing conditions, taking down bin Laden, pulling the troops out of Iraq, 29 months of consecutive private sector job growth. We did this. Mm-hmm. And Obama made it the collectivist
we.
And the Republicans stepped at it because they said, we built this, and they went with the collectivism by saying,
right.
We built this. They proved
Oops.
Obama right in their own slogan.
Right.
Yeah. Even some things are left out to steal, like rat poison.
Barbara is calling us from Sacramento. Oh, we got to go to break, so Barbara in Sacramento will come to you right after this because I really want to hear your comment. But I'm John Fugelsang. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We're taking your calls at 1-800-STEP-1-2. Watching on Current TV, your radio, or your internet. We'll be right back.
This is rapidly approaching a spectacle.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week, joined by comedians Trevon Free and Rick Overton, taking your calls about the conventions at 1-800-STEPH-1-2. Can I tell you what I thought was the highlight of the Democratic Convention?
I think we agree.
Not Barack Obama's speech, not Michelle Obama's speech, not Tammy Duckworth's speech.
We still agree.
Not Bill Clinton's speech.
Still agree.
The highlight for me of the convention was Governor Jennifer Granholm.
We agree.
Now, sure. Mitt Romney loves our lakes and our trees. He loves our
They're
cars
the right height.
So much they even have their own elevator. But the people who design and build and sell those cars, well, in Romney's world, the cars get the elevator and the workers get the shaft.
Brilliant. That is Governor Jennifer Granholm, for my money, the best speech of the entire week, and that's saying something. And her excellent, excellent Current TV show, The War Room, is going to be moving to 10 p.m. starting this week. So all y'all, do yourself a favor. If you haven't gotten hip to this show yet, she's so brilliant. She's so insightful. You know, too bad about her looks, but, you know, such a dynamite, in addition to being a dynamite legislator, such a great broadcaster. I had the tremendous honor of filling in on that show for a week last June, and her staff is stunning. It's such a great group of pros that run that show. They tape up there in San Francisco, right across from where the Giants play. That's right. Rick Overton was a guest on the show.
I was one of your guests.
I had you and Will Durster on together.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited her show is going to 10 p.m. Everyone should watch her, and she will be a guest on this show with me later on this week, I think tomorrow. So
great.
I'm really thrilled about that. I want to know more about who y'all think. Well, let me ask you guys. Was there a loser the week of the Democratic Convention?
Oh, man. Who lost?
Anyone?
I think maybe Romney after that convention. Because, I mean, the polls are showing Obama got about a 5-point bump.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Romney went down a point.
Yeah.
The speeches were great. I mean...
They're all pretty good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I'm thinking, I can't really find...
Well, I would say for the maybe...
Catastrophe there.
Maybe for the DNC, the loser could be people who wanted dialogue about the drug war, because that wasn't brought up, and I was very disappointed.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, not an individual, but...
I'm looking for an individual wherever I can. I mean, you know...
I can't find one.
Maybe Arthur Davis for not being able to be a part of that. Running to the other side.
You know who the loser was? Barney Frank, because he had a terrific speech. He got bumped from his night and had to go at 5 o'clock the next day, so the primetime audience didn't get to see him. I would have said the big loser were people who care about climate change. But thank goodness the president mentioned climate change in his speech and said it's not a hoax. And I was so relieved, especially because I was sitting next to Al Gore, and I think he was going to throw a chair at somebody if that didn't get mentioned.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, but it was I was very, very pleased. So, but I'd say there weren't a lot of losers at the DNC. There were a lot of winners, a lot of great speeches. Julian Castro, of course.
Great.
My wife's aunt used to teach him music in San Antonio.
Wow.
So I've always heard about him. But it was great. And we wanted to know what you think. Can we go to Kathy in Virginia? Because Kathy has a great suggestion for who won at the DNC. Kathy, who was the big winner for you at the Democratic Convention?
To me, the big winner was Deval Patrick, because he was telling the DNC to get a spine. And I think that, you know, with people like you that can go with Republicans toe-to-toe on this religious crap. But no, I'm serious. You know, we need this so badly. And, I mean, we've got two people that have already said something. Everything's getting great reviews. But, I disagree with you on the winner, the Republican Party, Ann Romney.
Tell
me. Coming from a 50-year-old Caucasian woman who was a cheerleader, that's all she looked like to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was goofy.
You didn't find her likable? You didn't find her engaging?
I thought she was goofy, and I think she's flat out full of it. I'm sorry. I don't think she connects with, you know, normal women. I don't. How can she possibly?
Yeah, I agree. Although I don't connect with normal women too well myself. But I'm looking for anything nice I can say about the Romneys. Please understand, it's very important to me to not just have disdain the entire time. We'll be taking more of your calls in the next hour. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang with Trevon Free and Rick Overton. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all 3 hours today and all week on your radio or current TV. Thrilled to be joined by two of my favorite West Coast comedians. Aw, shucks. Two of my favorite comedians, period. Trevon Free, Rick Overton. My dream tour. And we are taking your calls all day at 1-800-STEPH-12. Trevon, I want to read you this. Skip Hatos writes to me on the Twitter, if you're wondering how Mitt would do with a drink, just look at Reince Priebus's RNC performance. Yeah, Reince Priebus. You know, every man over 50 has to get his Reince Priebus check. Did you know that? Every 6 months.
Right.
You really, it's the healthy thing to do.
Oh, it's much better these days. They use a camera. You're out cold. You have no idea you've been violated at all. It's great.
I got to tell Vice President Gore last week the now common meme that if you take all the vowels out of Reince Priebus's name, do you know what it spells?
What?
It spells RNCPRBS. It really does. RNCPRBS.
Wow.
Oh, that's great.
Coincidence. all right, we're going to be taking your calls. We're still going to be doing our convention hangover special. But first off, one of my favorite guests of the show is here. Of course, Media Matters is keeping you safe from the lies Fox News spews on a daily basis. Media Matters exists for one reason, to deliver you the truth and point out the lies. And Eric Bollert is the hero of the day. It's always a pleasure listening to him on Stephanie's show, but it's an even bigger pleasure interviewing him. Good morning, Eric Bollert.
Hey, how's it going?
What a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you. We're all big fans here, but before we start, I want to ask you, who would you say were the biggest winners and losers of each convention?
Well, you know, obviously Clint, I think, in Tampa,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that Eastwood speech was amazing.
It was amazing. I liked it.
I think it was magnificent. It was a glorious out. He knew he was in the heart of the dragon, and he stabbed it.
You know, the fact that they had no idea what he was going to say. They clear the prime time speaking, and they don't know what he's going to say. And as he has told local reporters in California, he didn't know what he was going to say when he went out there.
Yeah.
You know, there's such a difference between, you know, the production and really the community, the communication of politics and what Republicans cannot do and what Democrats can do. And my favorite part of the Clint Eastwood was, you know, the day or two after, you know, the right-wing media forcing itself to convince each other that it was a home run, that it was spectacular, and don't believe the spin, and everyone loved Clint Eastwood. But, you know, when you're married to a train wreck like that, it's hard to detach yourself.
Well, in fairness to Mr. Eastwood, I think he was trying to do a Bob Newhart bit, except Newhart rehearses. And right. And I do think, yeah, I've got to remember that the crowd loved it. He had a standing ovation.
He got big laughs. You know, again, you know, the idea that you're not even going to know what this, you know, this actor is going to say. I mean, to me, it was just amazing, and it really revealed sort of a recklessness, I thought.
And they did bump the very fine Governor Romney promotional film that was supposed to air in that hour in primetime, and they bumped
it.
Right,
and some of the spin afterwards, it was they're blaming the press because in the years previous, some of the networks were saying, you know, we don't really like these, you know, these propaganda films. We're not going to air them. But the networks had told the Romney campaign, we will air it. If that's what you want to do in primetime, we're going to air it. And on the Democratic side, again, it's just sort of night and day, you know, the enthusiasm, the speaking. You know, as I tweeted last week, I said, what is it about Democratic speechwriters versus Republican speechwriters? It's like all-stars versus amateurs. Speaker after speaker, they really just knocked it out of the park. It was fun to watch. It was engaging. Everyone in the hall would seem to be having a great time. And so now we're seeing the poll reaction, and it's fairly obvious. I mean, you know, I think Obama's going to get a small decent bump, and Romney didn't get really get much of anything. The final thought on the conventions, though, is, you know, I have to wonder, you know, how much longer we're going to see these, and how much longer, you know, the media is going to spend so much money covering them and sending so many people down there. It has nothing to do with the nominating process, obviously, and it's a couple speeches at night. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see in 4 or 8 years if we're still talking about conventions.
I find that sad. I mean, one of my greatest, fondest childhood memories was watching every night of every convention with my dad, and you know, I think you really learn a lot about civics. And, you know, I like that we have this week every 4 years where they get together and decide on their talking points for the next 8 weeks.
Yeah, and, you know, it was heartening. You know, I mean, 4 years ago, 40 million people watched John McCain. I mean, 40 million people watched Barack Obama in their convention speech. This year, down somewhat. I mean, Romney really took a hit down to 30 million. Obama was still at 35 million. And that is a good thing. And the debates, we're going to see, you know, I assume, a huge audience again, and people will get sort of this unvarnished look at what the candidates are doing. But, yeah, I mean, there was Bill Clinton. I still remember 20 years ago listening to his convention speech on a radio in upstate New York because I couldn't get a TV signal. They are important, and they are sort of defining moments, I think. But that being said, again, I think they're moving so far away from content. It'll be interesting to see if the media continue to give them as much time and attention.
The right wing is really trying to sell us that Obama's speech was lousy and low energy. Yeah. Would you agree with that meme?
No, you know, it didn't really work. And what was the poll? The poll from Ohio yesterday that showed Obama up 5. One of the questions they asked, who gave a better speech? You know, Romney or Obama? Obama 2-1. 60% said Obama. 30% said Romney. I think it was a different type of speech than 2008. And I think a couple people mentioned, you know, it was you know, a bit more statesman. He is the president, and that's how it came across. But, you know, people who weren't watching it for sort of the theater criticism aspect, but just wanted to know, by the way, what do you want to do for the next 4 years? You know, I thought it was very, very helpful. Look, I mean, you know, no matter what Obama says or what kind of speech he gives, the right-wing media, you know, they are so committed to this Obama derangement syndrome it literally at this point doesn't matter what he says. And they are clearly stewing. There's a bit of bafflement and bewilderment, you know, among the right-wing bloggers. You know, I was seeing one over the weekend, you know, was sort of baffled, like, why isn't Romney winning by 10 points? I mean, that really is their view, their world view. You know, because Obama's a monster, he's a Marxist, he's a socialist. This is going to be a layup. You know, it's going to be so easy to defeat him. And I honestly worry about these people as this campaign progresses, because, you know, I'm not sure how they're going to deal with the reality of what appears to be, you know, what's going to happen on Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
Because they live in this self-fulfilling bubble where they just hear it over and over again.
Exactly.
I mean, Dick Morris with a brand new column up saying, you know, the wind is at Romney's back. He's going to win unless there's a catastrophe. I mean, if you hear that and digest that day after day, it's going to be really uncomfortable on Election Night.
Well, I think, Eric, that explains all of the falsehoods in Paul Ryan's speech. So many people were shocked that the VP nominee could tell so many easily disproved lies in his speech. And I think it's because the man is just used to living in the bubble and speaking to audiences that aren't going to fact check him.
You know, I think that's a really good point. And again, people were sort of taken back. Like, since when do vice presidential candidates, you know, at the convention just sort of make stuff up? You know,
I think precedent was established in 2008.
Yeah. You know, she really set this out, you know, the precedent with the bridge to nowhere, I think. That was completely unforced there. And Paul Ryan just followed it up with the GM plant closing. Completely unforced there. Didn't have to make it. But I think there's something to it. You know, he's been telling this lie about that plant closing for so long to either Republican audiences or on Republican talk shows or on Fox News. And there's no pushback. So I think you're right. Within that bubble, the lying is chronic, and then they step out and they just sort of repeat the same rhetoric, and then they get sort of bombarded, and the reaction is like, oh, wait, I thought everyone was cool with this lie about the GM plan. What's going on?
Oh, the lies about Simpson Bowles, the lies about Medicare.
Right.
Paul Ryan,
Medicare,
he reminded me of like a young comedian who steals some more famous comedian's joke. Like, he steals a joke, and it's fine in the open mics, and it's fine when you're playing rooms for your friends, and then you get on TV, and you're so convinced this joke was written by you, you've done it so many times, and then everyone's going to call you out on being a joke thief, and you didn't even realize because you were performing in the bubble.
This bubble, it's really fascinating. Look, you know, when John Kerry in 2004, you know, when the writing was on the wall, you know, I just don't remember a sort of liberal blogger saying, you know, this is Kerry's to win when he was trailing by 5 or 6 points. You know, the electoral math looked awful. You know, I just don't think there was that amount of delusion. Yes, Democrats were desperate for John Kerry to win. Yes, now and again a poll would come out where it might be tied and, you know, this ray of hope. But this idea that, you know, he was just going to take it, he was going to win in a waltz on November, you know, that wasn't allowed to permeate, I don't think, in sort of the liberal opinion press, the way it is absolutely cemented right now in the conservative press. And again, I don't know who's going to pay for the therapy after November at this point.
Well, their therapy may be impeaching a second-term Democratic president. We've seen precedent for I actually think, in retrospect, John Kerry may have dodged a bullet by not being elected in 2004, because he would have inherited a crap economy in that whole crash, although I was really inspired to see him give one of the finest speeches of this
convention. Yeah, see, again, that was, you know, he wasn't even a keynote speaker, and he was just sort of on the roster for that night. But, boy, there were probably like 7 or 8 speeches, out of Charlotte that topped the best that was done in Tampa. It's just amazing. The Democrats just sort of own communication, and they own marketing.
They do.
And they sort of tie it in with pop culture in a way that the Republicans are completely stumped by.
Were you surprised, Eric? I just went onto FoxNews.com this morning and to see the headline, Obama fundraising edges out Romney in August. Are you surprised in the Citizens United era that the month of the conventions, Obama still raised more money than Governor Romney?
I am surprised. I mean, I didn't think it was going to go over $100 million for Obama. I just figured, you know, Citizens United and Adelson and Rove, they were just going to keep writing checks. I think it makes everyone uncomfortable. I mean, what was that last month? $225 million raised in a month for a campaign. So, you know, TV stations can cash more checks.
Exactly. That's the winner of both conventions, I think.
Yeah, right. And And so they're just going to plow all of this stuff into ads in 8 more states. I feel so sorry for the people who live in those 8 states that are just going to be barraged by this stuff. But, yeah, I mean, Karl Rove thought Citizens United was going to be the ticket. They were just going to write checks and buy the presidency and buy the White House. It's not working out that way. And I think the real test in fundraising will be October if people realize that, you know, is there going to be a conventional wisdom that this thing has just completely slipped away from Romney? Because that was really the one advantage they had. And as of today, even that has evaporated.
I'm really shocked. And I think you're exactly right, Eric. You know, one of the things that we discussed on the current TV coverage of the conventions last week was how Citizens United in the beginning was seen to completely help the GOP, and now corporations can buy elections. And the irony is it's hurt Republican voters, because throughout the primary season, fans of real conservatives like Gingrich or Santorum saw their candidates mowed down by the Mitt Romney money machine. And so in the Republican race for the nomination, Citizens United hurt the conservative voting base.
Now, here's the other irony is, again, Citizens United, Karl Rove said, aha, I know more billionaires than Democrats. We are going to buy this election. We are just going to keep writing checks. So what did it do? It created this tsunami of TV ads. And they launched it in the summer, and then they said, you know, we've got all this money on reserve for the fall that we can't use. And boy, when that kicks in, we are just going to bury Obama. What has happened, though? Again, all of these ads are basically in 8 states. By August and September, everyone in those 8 states has completely tuned out every political ad.
Oh, yeah.
So what does that leave? Diminishing returns. What does that leave you for September, October, November? Nothing. I mean, there is not going to be a single ad that they're going to run between now and November that's going to move the dial. So, I think it's ironic. They thought they were just going to buy the campaign, but it turns out diminishing returns. You can't keep buying people's attention. They just completely tune it out.
Eric, I think the only hope Governor Romney has with these 8 swing states really is that older voters who might skew Republican don't use TiVo or DVR, so they don't zap the commercials. They're actually watching all these horrible commercials. But the liberals who have DVR, they're just like, oh, I'm not going to watch any of this. I'm going to go see the rest of Modern Family.
But even if you don't have DVR, I mean, the effect after, you know, a while is just numbing. And there's no way they can break through. And it's interesting, and I don't think the press has really picked up on that. I think the press has always just thought, you know, the more money you have, the more influence you're going to have. But again, I think in the Citizens United era, that the attack ad as a weapon probably played itself out over the summer.
What a man, what a man, what a mighty, mighty good man. Eric Bollard of Media Matters, how can people follow you?
MediaMatters.org and Eric Bollard at Twitter, you know, at Eric Bollard for Twitter.
Fantastic. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Smart guy.
Smart.
Smart guy. Accurate. Anyone who gets Michelle Malkin that mad that often is doing something right in my book.
These are the ways you can tell you're doing it right when the right people are angry at you. They're like a little dashboard reward light.
Right.
Bing. Not there's something wrong with it, there's something right with your engine. Bing.
Amen. We'll be back right this second. We'll be able to take more of your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm John Fugelsang, along with Rick Overton and Trayvon Free. In the next 2 hours, we're going to be joined by Justin Bartha of the Hangover Films and the new series, The New Normal. So stick around.
It's like a Mensa meeting with fart jokes. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
That is Ziggy Marley, my friends. Ziggy Marley on solo acoustic guitar covering Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. Bob Dylan's 35th studio album, Tempest, is released tomorrow on September 11th. I've heard it. It's amazing. amazing. Rolling Stone gave it a 5-star review, and that means that the Steph Heads have to listen to me playing a little bit of Dylan this week. That great Ziggy Marley cover is from Amnesty International's collection earlier this year. It's called Chimes of Freedom, and it is a 75-track a Bob Dylan tribute of covers of everyone from Lenny Kravitz to Miley Cyrus, who does a great country cover of You're Gonna Make Me Lonesome When You Go. And that is all to raise money for Amnesty International. So buy that. I'm John Fugelsang here on the Stephanie Miller Show, filling in for Steph all week, along with Rick Overton and Trevon Free. Thank you both for joining us this morning. You had a pretty good analogy, Trevon.
Yeah, I think we all saw Reince Priebus's very drunken speech at the RNC.
Doesn't it sound like his name when he's drunk? It sounds like he can't say his actual name.
Right.
And it comes out as, I'm Reince Priebus. Who? I'm Pell Flavis. Who? I'm Teg Pellman. Who? Farvis Hovan.
I think we should probably start just calling when you go out with your friends at night, like you just come back like, dude, last night we got so Priebus'd. You won't even believe how Priebus'd we got.
I was Eastwooding everywhere. Talking to inanimate objects.
Oh, man, I am so Priebus'd. Oh, that's brilliant. I love it. We have one
and the next morning, you're Postbus'd.
We had one caller, you know, who said Reince Priebus is actually an anagram for re-rub ice penis. I didn't know that. Yeah, it's funny. My name's Fugelsang. I waited my entire life to find someone with a goofier name than me. Reince, you are my alpha and omega. Thank you. You are a God's gift to comedians. You know,
Reince and repeat.
Remember to wash your Reince Priebus every day. Because comedians have had it tough with Barack Obama for 4 years. Arguably the first non-buffoon in a generation to be in the White House. Bill Clinton, great guy. Very easy for comedians to make fun of. And George Bush, Bush-Cheney, that was like having a stooge and a Sith in one package. You know, you had dumb and evil at the same time. Barack Obama, comedians have had this arid, parched desert of comedy because he's just not that easy to make fun of. He's a smart, decent guy who just isn't that goofy.
And I think that's what scares them the most is he's so normal, so like a human being.
Yes, which is why comedians beg you to vote for Mitt Romney. We'll be right back with your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. This is The Cure and Robin. This is called Close to Konnichiwa, and this is one of my favorite mashups of all time. Hal gets to play all the metal songs when he comes in here. I like to play the mashups because I think that's just become its own art form. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie Miller. It's the Stephanie Miller Show, joined by Trevon Free and the icon of comedians, the comedian's comedian, the alpha and the omega, so Mr. Rick Overton.
Pressure.
A lot of pressure. Now be funny. Now be funny now. And we're taking your calls all morning asking y'all who was the biggest winners and biggest losers of both conventions. And so far, we're not really getting a lot of people saying they were losers at the DNC. Really not a lot of calls on that, although we have some great comments on it. And one of my favorites is that the biggest winner of the DNC was Al Gore, because they loved being able to watch him talk about how much he loved politics. And this was Mama Massage wrote, "Winner Al Gore, I'm so glad he let us see his genuine passion for his work. My joy was seeing his joy." And I couldn't agree more. It was a real pleasure being able to you know, be there and just to watch Al Gore talking about this. The guy knows his stuff. Would you believe it?
Right. Vice president, and that must have been cool.
Oh, that's right. He was vice president. Yeah, that's why I knew that.
And he was kind of president.
You mean he was president?
Yeah,
yes, he was elected president by the majority of Americans.
Yeah.
He was president for a few days.
He was the man that the most Americans chose to be president, and he was the man the most Floridians wanted to be president.
Yes, but thanks to the miracle of modern electronic technology.
Oh, you mean 20th century paper technology, don't you? Because that's what the hanging Chad.
Yeah.
Debacle.
Oh, the hanging Chads.
Always those Chads. Man.
Always the Chads, man.
Well, he probably has more power now.
I hope he does.
And more influence now. You're very restricted when you're in that office, and there's a different set of rules that you don't have to follow once you're out of that place.
Yeah, well, he's doing some great things with Current, I got to say. I mean, I was a fan of Current TV when it was like 15-minute shows of college kids giving movie reviews.
I remember that. That came in the early days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to watch that all the time, but now between having Bill Press and Stephanie on TV, which is just good for democracy, putting Elliot Spitzer on at 8, and in my opinion, every night, Elliot Spitzer gives a master class in Wall Street crime and how to combat it.
Right.
And then Governor Granholm, you know, good God. And now Joy Behar, smartest hire, by the way. Her show's terrific. It's called Say Anything, and it's so great to have Joy.
Yeah,
to have her back.
She is on The View. She has just pulled no punches.
Right?
She is good, rock the boat to the point where just deck chairs are sliding off into the ocean.
She had a great interview with Melissa Etheridge last week. It's like Current is so great. What can Current do next? What could Current TV possibly add to a lineup like this to make it even better?
Give me a show.
We'll have to see. Yeah, but they should give you a show. We're going to be taking your calls, and we have a few people who have been on hold for a very long time. Tony, if you would, Tony Sorrentino filling in for Chris Lavoie. I'd like to go to Paul in Michigan. You've been on hold for a long time. Paul, good morning. You're on the Steph Miller Show.
Yeah, how you doing this morning?
Good. Great to hear you.
Oh, great to hear you, too. It's kind of weird watching your show and it being so far behind on the phone and the TV.
Oh, I understand. It's like you're talking to the shuttle astronauts. I understand.
Yes, it sort of is. Actually, what I was wanting to talk about was earlier you guys were talking about the extreme right and how, you know, they all believe in the rapture and whatnot.
Not all of them, but it's
kind of. Right. Well, I mean, isn't that kind of... I guess an awkward point to bring up on the subject. Understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't. What do you mean?
Well, I don't really understand how that has anything to do with the politics that are being involved here as far as all these issues.
Oh, it doesn't. Rick Overton made a joke, and we talked about it for a while.
I was joking about it. Why would you vote in November of 2012 when you're basically out the next month?
I got you on that one. But it seems to me, I mean, kind of, this is more stemming from, the woman's right to choose issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I guess, you know, I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, how is it exactly that the Republicans are trying to take away a woman's right to choose, and how is this a war on women? I'm kind of confused.
Okay, sure. Well, let's run down a few areas, because, I'm of the opinion that when it first began, I thought the war on women rhetoric was a bit extreme and might blow back for the Democrats, but over the past few months, from the way they want to limit women's access to birth control, yet still wanting health providers to give Viagra to men, to having a platform that will essentially allow rapists to pick out the mothers of their own children. And that's where they really lost me for good. I stopped defending the Republicans and saying Democrats are being too harsh when they wrote into their platform that victims of rape or incest had no right to control what happens with their bodies.
And I actually have not read this part of the legislation. Could you tell me where I could find that?
Yeah, you can just Google the Republican Party platform of 2012. To his credit, Governor Romney came out and said that he supports women's right to reproductive choices in the case of rape or incest. But then he goes on Meet the Press yesterday and talks about how he wants to repeal Roe versus Wade. That's the double flip-flop triple axle. He actually violates his own party's platform, which I almost respect him for standing up for something and not being a complete panderer, but then he wants to repeal it as well. So go ahead and figure that one out.
All right, yeah, and I understand. But do you not possibly feel that most of us, in order to be part of one party or another, have to sacrifice some of our beliefs or morals?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I respect people who are, you know, and the Democratic Party is a big tent. The Republican Party used to be.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's getting to the point, it's hard to even keep track, because, like, everything you guys say that's on Fox is a lie, and then everything that you guys say they say is a lie.
I don't say everything on Fox is a lie. I don't say that at all.
You know what I'm saying. Yeah, well, we were discussing earlier about pointing out the Fox lies.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's there, and I don't think Fox is the worst offender.
Are you a Fox fan?
No, I'm neither fan, to tell you the Lord's honest truth. I'm kind of a believer that it seems to me that the two parties are more kind of divided on issues that I guess, and affect the American public, but it seems to me that there's like nobody caves. Nobody gives one way or the other.
Right.
And it seems to me that rather than, you know, focusing on, you know, Democrat or Republican, we should, you know, focus more on people.
Okay. Well, let me thank you for the call. Let me give you one example on the abortion issue. Gallup had a poll in May that I thought was very telling. It showed that 20% of all Americans are opposed to abortion in all cases. Okay. 25% of Americans support abortion in all or some cases. I mean, in all cases. And then 52% of Americans supported abortion rights in all or some cases. So, but only 43% of Americans classify themselves as pro-choice. Okay? So when this came out, we saw a big flurry in the right-wing media. People saying, oh, look, here's the final proof. Pro-choice is on the way out. It's a minority. But when you add up the Americans, the 25% who believe in abortion should be illegal in all cases, and the 52% who think it should be illegal, who should be legal rather in some cases, that's 77% of Americans who support a woman's right to choose to some degree. Mm. Okay, only 43% classify themselves as pro-choice, and I think that's very interesting. My parents were always voting for Democrats. They weren't Democrats. They always voted Democrat. They didn't like abortion. They would never call themselves pro-choice, but they felt that a woman had a right to make that choice herself. They were very happy, like many older Democrats, when Bill Clinton said abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. And this is what I mean by the Democrats have a big tent. You don't have to be pro-choice to be in the Democratic Party. There are plenty of pro-lifers, and I hate both terms, by the way. But the fact is that 77% of Americans support abortion in all or some cases versus 20% who believe that it should always be illegal. That's an example of what I mean, that how the Democrats have a big tent and how the language can be manipulated to show, you know, what is not. But the fact is, you can be a pro-lifer and find a home in the Democratic Party, just like you can be a pro-choicer.
I think where the line gets blurred, too, is the line between what you as an individual think and the liberty of the individuals in the country. So it's like, yeah, I can think that abortion should never be legal in any case. I don't have the right to make that a law because that's how I feel as a person. I can have that opinion. I can make that choice in my personal life. But I can't tell you that you can't have an abortion because I think you shouldn't.
Well, let me.
Which is really what small government should be standing behind.
Exactly. I agree with that. But let me give you the flip side. Here's what our anti-abortion friends would say. They would say, we believe it's a human life, and we believe in using the legislative process to do everything we can to preserve that life. Now, I'm the first to say that if you support the death penalty and preemptive war and drone bombs and torture, then you don't get to call yourself pro-life. You're pro-some life.
Right.
But they really do believe that they are trying to save innocent life, and I think they have a right to use the legislative system to try to advance their goals. If you want to overturn Roe versus Wade, you have a right to fight for that in a free society.
You just got to get the numbers to do it.
Yeah. Now, I think the real solution is we don't have an abortion problem. We have an unwanted pregnancy problem. We have an abortion symptom. If you can get all the sides to get together and say, hey, how are we going to do something about all these unwanted pregnancies, then the abortion problem takes care of itself. Would you all agree?
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Like, how do you... You say you want less abortion, but you take away things like Planned Parenthood that help prevent people from getting in the situation to need abortions.
Exactly.
So it's like, how do you can't have one without the other.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And this is what was so brilliant about what the president tried to do with the Affordable Care Act and providing birth control to women, providing contraceptive care. If your health plan already covers Viagra, listen, I'm sorry, but you know when men are allowed to tell women they can't have birth control? When men stop trying to...
Right.
Stoop women.
Right.
Then they have a right to say what you can do with your body, in my opinion. When men are no longer interested in interfering with women's bodies, then they have a right to tell them. Then they still don't have a right to tell
they
them
don't,
what to do.
That's not enough to get in,
it's not.
Inside the house. But I think right now this is mostly, this is info source wars. This is about he's calling based on all the data he got. He sounds like a really decent guy. And his conclusions drawn were really like sound decency-based rules. And what his complaint, I can see his point with his complaint, but he's using all the data he had up to this point.
Exactly.
So much of it is certain areas. They just don't get the other data.
But see, there's lots of people who support a woman's right to choose but don't like abortion.
Right.
And that's the silent... That's a big chunk of our society that I think is silent. People who won't call themselves pro-choice. They don't like that label, but they do support a woman's right to choose. They just don't like abortion. And that's actually most people. I've never met pro abortion people.
All right, no one's pro-killing babies.
If men could get pregnant, you'd have pro-abortion people. They'd be bragging. Dude, I had a third trimester abortion, then I went for a 10-mile run the same day.
If guys were the ones having babies, you could get an abortion at every Starbucks and Jamba Juice.
Amen. We got to go to break. We'll be right back with Justin Bartha of the Hangover Films and the New Normal on The Stephanie Miller Show.
What the hell was that?
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Up and smoke me when I die. And if anyone don't like it, just look them in the eye. I didn't come here and I ain't leaving, so don't sit around and cry. Just roll me up and smoke me when I die.
Keep playing this.
Now you won't see no
this is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph, and you were listening to Willie Nelson from his new album, Heroes. Terrific record. This is Roll Me Up and Smoke Me When I Die. Listen to this.
There's a party, come on by.
That's Snoop Dogg singing.
Roll me up and smoke me when I die.
This is Snoop Dogg and Willie Nelson singing together.
What on earth do those two have in common?
Listen to this.
And if anyone don't like it, just look them in the eye. I didn't come here and I ain't leaving, so don't sit around and cry. Just roll me up and smoke me when I die.
It's a great song. Chris Christopherson sings on this song as well. It's from Willie Nelson's new album. It's called Heroes. Terrific record. Most of the album is duets with Willie's son, Lucas, and I highly recommend it. That's
only marijuana could bring together a gangster rapper from Long Beach and a country singer
and
on a country
and could
song.
Make Snoop Dogg sing a country song. Okay, we are ready with our guest. Justin Bartha, for those of you all don't know, is a fine American actor. He appeared in The Hangover and The Hangover 2, and I'm very excited about his new series. I'm sure you've seen the promos for The New Normal on NBC. Justin, welcome to The Stephanie Miller Show. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, Justin.
Hello.
Hi, Justin. How are you? Thanks for joining us on The Stephanie Miller Show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you. I'm very, very excited about the show, and I'm sure you are too. Congratulations on being picked up for a series. It looks terrific.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, for the folks who don't know, can you, I'm sure you've had to do this a gazillion times already, but can you let us know the premise of the series?
Yeah, the show is about basically a new family. It centers around a gay couple, played by myself and Andrew Reynolds, who wants to start a family, so we hire a surrogate to have a baby, and then that surrogate is a single mother, and then she has a grandmother, played by Ellen Barkin, and the two families come together and start a new family.
Now, besides the shocking fact that Ellen Barkin is playing grandmothers, I'm very, very excited because it seems like a very pro-family show. Wouldn't you agree? It seems like we're in an age where a show like this not only reflects the society, but it also is a really kind of heartwarming presence.
Family values.
Absolutely. That's the whole point of the show. It's a family comedy. It is absolutely a pro-family show. It's all about family and all about love and all about acceptance.
Which is why I was so shocked, and I'm sure you were as well, Justin, to hear that the NBC affiliate in Salt Lake City has announced they won't be airing The New Normal when it debuts this fall.
Yeah, a different affiliate picked it up in Salt Lake City. I wasn't really that shocked because I do, you know, obviously there's still kind of bigotry in the country, unfortunately, and that's just part of the country that has that. You know, it's unfortunate, but you know, it's not. I don't know if it's all because there's a gay couple on the show. Obviously, there's gay people on other TV shows, but you know, some of our dialogue is a bit out there, and we especially Ellen Barkin's character, we kind of go for it, it's a bit risque, some of it. So I think that's how people talk, and I think people will really laugh at some of the things that are said.
Is it a show that families can watch with kids, or is it more for grown-ups and teens?
I think it definitely, personally, I would allow my kids to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like anything on television or anything, period, maybe the parents should watch it first and decide for themselves. That's the beautiful thing about this country, is that it's up to you.
Right on. I did find it a bit dismaying that the state that's number one for online porn consumption would have a problem with this series.
secrets.
Well, now you've done serious TV before, of course. I know that this isn't the first show you've done. I guess most folks out there would know you from your roles in The Hangover and The Hangover 2. Are you signed on for Hangover 3?
Yes, we start tomorrow.
Nice. No way. Right. Congratulations. It's very, very exciting. Now, for this role, did you have any anxiety about playing part of a gay couple?
I mean, I didn't. I mean, it was one of the best things I'd ever read, and we were in the fifth episode right now, and it's some of the greatest things that I've ever made. I've never been more proud of anything. It's just not in my kind of wheelhouse to be, scared about that kind of stuff. I love it. I love a little challenge, or even if you call it a challenge. And I don't think sexuality really defines a character like that. It's more about the only reasons why it does define it is that because they are two men, they need to hire a surrogate. But that happens to straight couples too.
It does.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've known plenty of gay couples who have hired surrogates, and I think what I like most about the series so far is the title, because, you know, this is how it is now. This is,
exactly.
We live in an age where this is very, very normal, and where, you know, love assumes many different forms, and I can't think of a more pro-family kind of premise for a show in 2012 than what you're doing.
You said it perfectly, my friend.
You actually, I'm a fan because you are, that ever-increasing rarity of a film and TV actor who's not afraid to go do theater. You did the revival of Lend Me a Tenor, and last year you did our pal Zach Braff's play, All New People, at Second Stage. How was that for you as an experience?
That was great. Last year I did, Zach's play. I also did a play by the actor Jesse Eisenberg on off-Broadway. I love doing theater. That's kind of how I started. It's what I really always wanted to do was theater. So to go back and do that kind of stuff is kind of I get the most joy from that. But yeah, Zach's play was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I think I wish more actors would follow your lead. There's plenty of actors I wish would go back and help New York theater, and doing off Broadway as well. You get special points for that.
Absolutely.
A lot of folks will remember you as well from the National Treasure films. Do you have a favorite movie that you've done?
You know, they're like children. They're all my favorite. I like them all. I recently did a movie that hasn't come out yet called CBGB that was a lot of fun. That'll come out next year probably. It was about punk rock in the 80s and about CBGBs, which is a club in New York. And I got to play a rock star. So that was kind of a dream come true.
Wow, I've been looking forward to that film. Yeah, I've heard quite a bit about it. I actually had the pleasure of performing at CBGB's when it was still there. And
oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, doing stand-up in that room was pretty surreal, but I also played harmonica there for a musician friend once, and it's a club
that's cool.
That we miss very much in downtown Manhattan. Justin, do you know what CBGB stands for?
It stands for Country Bluegrass.
You're almost there.
Hold on, I'll get it.
You're already ahead of most
remember.
Of the kids in T-shirts.
I do remember. frick. Country Bluegrass Blues and Other Music for Uplifting Gormandizers.
Exactly, or Other Music from the Underground, depending on who you're talking to.
Yes.
You nailed it. Justin,
yes.
I thank you so much. I know how busy you are. Very grateful to you for taking the time. We're going to make everyone watch the new Normal when it premieres. Best of luck to you with the show, and thank you. I think doing a show like this is doing the Lord's work. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
What a pleasure. And we'll be right back with more on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Chuck Norris is to acting what Daniel Day-Lewis is to unnecessary facial surgery. I'm John Fugelsang. This is the Stephanie Miller Show, joined by Trevon Free, Rick Overton, and on the mic is Tony Sorrentino. We're taking your calls. We're going to get to all y'all this hour. I would just like to point out that the Al-Qaeda number 2 spot has become the Spinal Tap drummer of terrorism.
Again.
I hear they got the Al-Qaeda number 2, and so I Google Al-Qaeda number 2, and here's what I get. Al-Qaeda number two killed in June, in May, in like the last 8 years. If you're an Al-Qaeda number two, man.
Welcome, welcome. We looked over your resume. Looks great. We just, there may be some things they didn't tell you about the job. And we're going to take a little tour.
That's my thing. How do you recruit for terrorism? How do you recruit for terrorism? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Dead. Good.
What about when you find out you got promoted to number two? That must be the worst.
Hey, congratulations, your little cake. We wire the cake to your chest.
We have a surprise for you. You're our new number two.
Rocky Mountain Mike says, I better take Al-Qaeda number two guy off my LinkedIn profile. Good move, Mike. Yeah. In case you hadn't heard, they've gotten Al-Qaeda number two again. Because Barack Obama's so soft on Muslims. And we're taking your calls. There's folks who've been on hold for a long time. Can we go on to Patty, Tony in New York State on line four? Patty, you've been on the hold for an awfully long time. Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, good morning, all of you. You're really very entertaining, I must say.
We try. Thank you.
Thank you.
The reason, to all of you, the reason that I called in particular is being a Christian. I do see that there are a large amount of people who perceive Christians as being GOP only, or they're, as was remarked earlier, you know, the coming again. Well, being a Christian does not allow us to judge other people. We are to discern their behavior, to decide what is right, and to help people who are around us. God is the judge. Not us.
You're also supposed to scream at women outside clinics, aren't you? I think that's in the Bible somewhere, right?
I'm sorry,
you're supposed to scream at women outside clinics and keep gay people from being happy. Isn't that part of being a Christian? That's what I heard.
No, absolutely not.
I had no idea.
And, well, isn't that just a pity? But to be quite honest, gay is one of the most hated words in my vocabulary. Anyone who is homosexual is not leading the easiest lifestyle. Whoever came up with gay is out of their mind.
The food's pretty good, I heard. The food, the gay cuisine is just tops.
I like the cut of your jib. You're all right.
Isn't
you know?
She? Yeah.
I think Jesus would just stick his hand out of the cloud of the big thumb up. Boom. Come out like
what,
that.
What I think needs to happen is I think sane Christians need to speak up.
You got it.
Because they're letting like the crazy Christians hold the mic.
That's it.
And they're letting the crazy Christians control the mic, and it's making the whole entire group look bad. There's a lot of really nice, really sane, smart Christians who accept everybody and love everybody the way they're supposed to, but you let the crazies like the Bachmans and all these far right-wing religious people hold the microphone and speak for the entire group, and everyone's sitting back going, well, that doesn't represent me, but you guys should step up and say that, become the voice of your religion and send them to the wayside and the fringes where they belong.
Amen. Yeah. I mean, Patty, I think you're right on. I was raised by an ex-nun and an ex-Franciscan brother. I grew up in a house of people who were very Christian and very liberal. And then I grew up and all I ever saw on TV of Christianity was, like I said, douchebags yelling at women outside clinics. It seems like if you watch the major media, all you get in terms of spirituality in America are atheists and imbeciles and nothing in the middle. And I love my atheists, don't get me wrong, and I know all y'all atheists hate when we talk about the God stuff on the show, but I'm sorry, the other side is using it. We have to be prepared how to use it back. Atheists need to arm themselves with this stuff as well, because the further to the right you are in any religion, you know, that's really the sign. It's like fundamentalism is the problem. Cool religious people like Patty in New York, they're not making life hard for anyone.
Berrigans.
The Berrigans. There's lots. Martin Sheen, there's awesome Christians. Yeah. But it's the far right-wing fundamentalists of every religion that are making life interesting for the rest of us. Would you agree, Patty?
Yes, and when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, people's got to stop this racism crap. I don't care if you're green, white, blue, sparkling, or polka dots. We're of a human race. How much melanin a person has no basis on their intellect, their bearing, their composure, or anything else. And I don't care who you are, you owe respect to every person around you, whether it be the person who's sitting in the White House, who, by the way, I do not support.
Okay.
But that's my personal belief. And I truly believe that if more people would just say to all of our politicians, you're way overpaid, the people in this country are suffering, our military is on food stamps for crying out loud, And I think we could do much better. We have empty military bases that are mini cities that people could be living in that we're paying to maintain, and they're empty.
Yeah,
we can
well,
do better,
let me ask you one question, though, about what you just said. It's cool if you don't want to support this president. Are you a Mitt Romney fan?
No, to me at this point, it is a lesser of two evils.
What don't you like about Obama?
Everything. To be quite honest,
let's be specific.
What specifically, though? Like, what don't you agree with specifically that he's done in the last 4 years?
I do not believe the man has told one word of truth to us at all.
Oh, Patty, now you lost me. Let's be specific. Can you give me one specific thing? Give me a lie he's told, or give me a policy you don't like.
Well, my biggest issue with the gentleman is that he tried to sell a deep water naval base to China and tried to override Congress in that process, which was totally wrong. That is our property. It is not the president's property. Although he may be commander-in-chief, we as the United States citizens have the responsibility to bring forth in this country a path that all people can follow, and a leader that's really going to lead us.
Okay, but you think Mitt Romney is a better choice for that than Barack Obama? I mean, you don't think that the other administrations have, I mean, China owns our debt. They pretty much own us right now. And,
oh, I know.
You know,
and
you don't like
and
someone.
Romney sets up all his shops overseas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, bringing communist China into capitalism isn't always the worst thing, is it?
I believe it is. I really do not want anything to do with communist China.
But this is capitalist China. This is capitalist China we're talking about.
Well, you can call it capitalism, you can call it communism. I have a very dear friend who is from China, and what she has gone through there is
horrendous. No one's pro-communist China, don't get me wrong here, but if you're going to condemn Barack Obama for having one deal with China, you've got to condemn the last several presidents, especially President George H.W. Bush, who gave the most favored nation trading status after they slaughtered all those pro-democracy protesters in Tiananmen Square. But Patty, I'm sorry we disagree on this, but I thank you for the call, and I thank you for waiting on hold all that time. And let me say one thing about Mitt Romney and race. When Mitt Romney went to go speak to the NAACP, and I give Patty props at least for being against racism. She's, you know, kind of screwy in other regards. But when he went to the NAACP, I respected that he did it until that night. Because that was the same day that he came out and said, when he said to them that I'm going to repeal Obamacare, and they booed. Right. And then he came out right afterwards in an interview and said, well, I knew they would boo me for that line. So he said it deliberately to provoke them.
Right.
And then that night, giving another speech, he talked about how if you want free stuff, then don't vote for me. And they booed me because they want free stuff. Now, aside from the obvious racist overtones of saying that the black folks at the NAACP just want free stuff, they booed him for what he said about Obamacare. And he's been going around calling Obamacare a tax. So you don't get to call it a tax and call it free stuff on the same day.
Right.
That's a racist flip-flop with a triple axel, which has never been accomplished before.
Look, I think that entire speech he did, he knew he would eat it on camera to satisfy his base, saying he spoke up to the blacks. And he wasn't scared, and I told the truth to them, and knowing he was going to eat that one.
He knew it. He wasn't
strategic. He
wasn't talking to the NAACP. He was talking past the NAACP.
Right into the camera, to his base.
And that's why it was ugly, and it really made me lose a lot of respect for him. Not that, you know, I got
that
much to begin
start
with.
Off?
Well, I try. I don't want to just be some dittohead hating on Mitt Romney. He seems like a decent guy. His kids are nice. His wife seems nice enough. I don't want to be like, if you hate, you're not a liberal anymore. And I try to find positive things about this guy every day because I don't want to hate him.
He makes it really hard.
The lies are just I've never seen a major candidate lie.
Pointing
this
out
much.
A lie isn't hatred.
I'm
calmly pointing these things out because that's how you play a game of chess. You got to stay calm during the chess game.
That's what makes it hard to find something to like about Mitt Romney, because I look at a person and I see you publicly telling lies on a daily basis that are going to affect the lives of millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you really? Like, what? I can try to look at you as a human being and try to find a positive trait, but are you really a good person? If that's what you're doing?
I think his reason for being is to be the white horse of the Mormon Church. He will be the first Mormon president, and I think that's what he cares about. I think that's what he thinks is his destiny on Earth, and I think he is willing to say or do anything to make that happen. And with Mitt Romney, it's not about words. He said it himself. It ain't about words. It's about a number, 50.1%. He said it on the airplane to the press pool. If I get 50.1%, that's all I need. And in that sense, I believe this man is willing to say anything to gather that much of the vote. And I think he thinks the ends justify the means.
Yeah, and also when we say Mitt Romney, we're not just talking about one person. We're talking about a massive entity thrusting him up the volcanic spout, you know.
Oh yeah, this is you know, the Koch brothers.
This is
not all millionaires are bad people, but this is the dark side of the 1%. This is millionaires whose taxes have never been lower, who really think they need a tax cut. And if taxes have never been lower for the job creators and they ain't creating jobs, why do you think another tax cut will make them want to create jobs for us? Those are the bad guys. We got to go to break. We're going to take the rest of your calls. I'm John Fugel, signing along with Rick Overton and Trevon Free. It's getting hot in here. This is the Stephanie Miller Show on your radio, computer, and current TV.
What the hell was that?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show, and you are listening to The Roots. The song is called The Day. It's from the terrific album How I Got Over. If you're a lame white person looking for a terrific hip-hop album to play for your lame white friends, pick up anything by The Roots, but this is my favorite album by them. It's two records ago, I think, and the album, again, is called How I Got Over by The Roots. All right, a lot of tweets about Patty, our last caller, who may have been trollery. and Tom Schaefer was good enough to send in some clarification on exactly what she was talking about. She's either nuts or lying. Here it is. This is from the Washington Post, that left-wing rag. This is from last June 22nd issue. In recent weeks, the Pentagon has intensified discussions with Thailand, not China, about creating a regional disaster relief hub at an American-built airfield that housed B-52 bombers during the 60s and 70s. U.S. officials said they are also interested in more naval visits to Thai ports and joint surveillance flights to monitor trade routes and military movements. We should also point out that with President Obama and Leon Panetta of the Defense Department proposing all these cuts for the Pentagon budget, they want to spend more money building more aircraft carriers to be in the South Pacific, to sort of be a hedge against Chinese military might. So, you know what? It's not exactly like this president's in China's pocket. And right. I want to thank Tom Schaefer for sending this in, because Patty not only got the wrong facts, she got the wrong country. And, you know, I felt bad. She went on hold for a long time. But Republican Rehab tweets, Patty from New York, despite what she said, is a racist. She probably thinks just being polite to a black person makes her not.
Right? I let that black man hold the door for me. I'm a very nice person.
Well, I think, once again, I don't think she's lying. I think she's repeating lies. She doesn't know her lies from Fox News.
She heard it on
from,
Fox.
Drudge or something like
she's
that.
She's in the bubble.
You could, yeah. You could hear the gears turning in her head when I asked why. What's the reason? Yeah. She couldn't find anything except... She even said no when you said, tell me one thing. She said no.
Yeah, she wouldn't do it. She couldn't give me any specifics. And the fact that she didn't like Obama or Romney means she's a Republican, right?
Absolutely.
The trick is they're told to say, oh, I don't like either, which means they like the other.
Yeah, right. First-time caller. I was stumbling around the airwaves, and I happened to come across your show and thought I'd call in. Yeah, again, she's in the bubble. And anyone who tells you, well, I think they're both awful,
you're
is
not listening,
either
though.
A true third-party person or an embarrassed Republican. Let us go. Yeah. I'm here, of course, with Rick Overton and Trevon Free, and y'all have been on hold for a while. Let's go to Martin in North Carolina. Tony, you got that? Good morning, Martin. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
First
Thank you for
of
your
all,
patience.
I am Christian, and I support Obama 100%.
Okay. Rock on.
Secondly, Jennifer Grisham was astounding. She's beautiful, and she's astounding.
Wasn't she?
And Duval Patrick said, Democrats get off your butt and fight back, and they are fighting back. My other point is... I've been reading on a blog, some blogs, that the reason why Romney is withholding his taxes and hiding his taxes is because he's been money laundering through the Mormon Church via overseas accounts, via the Bain investment.
Ooh.
Have you heard anything about that?
I have. That's one I have not heard. What I heard, actually, Martin, was that Mitt Romney was under tithing his church and not getting a full 10%, and that's why he was being so secretive about his
I think he's lying. He lies for everything. The man, something's wrong, and that to me sounds true. That he's money laundering somewhere, and it's going to come out at some point.
Well, did you see Larry Flynt offered up $1 million if anybody can produce tax returns?
Mm-hmm. And you know, for all of Harry Reid's bluster, Mitt Romney hasn't proven him wrong. All Mitt Romney has to do is do exactly what his daddy did and release his tax returns. And I'll also point out, Mitt Romney gave John McCain 23 years of tax returns, gave the American people 1 year. To me, this means Mitt Romney is much more interested in being vice president.
And John McCain knows the truth.
John McCain knows the truth. That's very true.
Him and probably a few other people know exactly what he's hiding.
Well, this is a bit I did last night, but Mitt Romney, here's the deal with Mitt Romney. In Vietnam, he was only into missionary. As governor of Massachusetts, he was into multiple positions. On Wall Street, he's into the group thing with no protection. When he sucks up the teabaggers, he takes it to the base. You don't want to know how he does doggy style on the family trips. And he broke up with Bain Capital, still stayed friends with benefits, but when it comes to something vanilla like his tax returns, the guy won't put out.
Well, he's now he moonlights as a windsock for small airfields. Easterly, little easterly breeze coming in. Runway 3.
That's, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's so funny. Okay, Laura is calling us from New York City. Laura, welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. How do you listen to the Steph Show there in New York City?
Good morning.
Good morning.
We were talking about winners and losers at the on the speeches, and there was a statement that Romney made in his speech that I haven't heard anyone repeat or talk about, and I found it to be so incredible when he was telling his fictional story about his humble beginnings. He said that he and a few of his friends had a good idea to start a business, so they were going to go to the Mormon church to borrow money.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said if it didn't go well, he didn't want to go to hell, so he borrowed the money from the evangelicals.
Hmm.
So does that mean that the church is in the loan sharking business?
The money changers are in the temple.
That he made about, you know, kids that want to go to college. He said, if you don't have the money, just borrow it from your parents.
Yep.
Who goes to the church to start a business?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he borrow money from his dad? Got money from his dad?
Well, there's been a lot of issue about that. You know, he claims that when his dad died, his dad left him no money. That's a lie. His father left him money, and he gave the money to his kids. He didn't take it, but he got it. He, in case you haven't noticed, he's a bit shady with the truth.
Right.
Laura, I thank you very much for the call. That's a very fascinating aspect, although I do want to stress again, it's very inspiring to me in 2012 that, nothing against our Protestant friends, but that we have on both tickets no WASPs for the first time in American history. Hmm. I'm sorry, President Obama is a Protestant, but then we've got a Mormon, and we've got two Catholics in the vice presidential slots. And I find that just so inspiring. Nothing against WASPs, but to think in 2012 we have a ticket with all four guys who are none of that.
Diversity.
It's great when you think about all the controversy over JFK in 1960.
Right.
America's come a long way, and we'll be right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
She's a very kinky girl, the kind you don't take home to mother. She will never let your spirits down once you get her off the street. Oh, girl. She likes the boys.
That's right, you're watching Papa this week. I am brand spanking new dad, John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie Miller. You ain't watching Mama. It's mashup week here on the show. Thrilled to take your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. Although, don't even call. We got so many people on hold, I want to get to all of them. I'm joined by Trevon Free, Rick Overton, Tony Sorrentino on the mic, and this is The Police with Rick James. It's mashup heaven on the show all week long.
That's a good one.
So many great, great, great great calls. Here's one from SK452022. We're taking your tweets at John Fugelsang on the Twitter. Mitt Romney won't show his taxes because he's better off in 2012 than he was in 2008.
Meaning
look at the Dow.
Obama brought the economy up to a point that it's embarrassing to reveal those returns.
How much money measure you want to throw, you want to say 8.3 unemployment? Listen, Reagan had 10% until he raised taxes. We were losing 750,000 jobs a month when he actually over 800,000 jobs the month he took office. It was the stimulus that slowed that down. Any measure you want to look at, employment, terrorism, Wall Street, we are doing better now than 4 years ago. And that's why liberals, if you're on the fence, if you're disappointed about things that Obama's done, I get you. But come on, man, who's fighting for you and who's Mitt Romney fighting for? Get on the bus already. Let's take a few more calls. Bill in Seattle has been on hold for an awfully long time. Good morning, Bill. I'm sure you're not a right-wing troll in disguise. Welcome.
How you doing?
Better now. Well,
I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. You guys are right on topic. I would like to know what the Mormon Church thinks about the doctrine, thou shalt not tell lies.
Bear false witness.
Bear false witness, right.
Yeah.
And Romney's been around doing just that.
Can I just say, I think it's because they pretend to be religious, but at the very highest stages of the, like the guys that are anti-gay, they're gay. The guys that
That's
are
not true. There's lots of very heterosexual bigots out there, Rick. It's true.
No, but I'm saying the politicians that are saying gays are this and that. The story. Just wait 3 months back. Right. There's the story.
No, I disagree with you again. I don't even think. I think the worst thing about Mitt Romney with the homophobia thing is I don't think Mitt Romney is a homophobe. I think he's a calculating non-homophobe who is using homophobia for votes. That's worse than being an ignorant bigot.
You're still making my point, though. You're saying that he doesn't actually believe in these.
Oh
things.
No, he doesn't. But he's not a Mitt Romney's not a bigot.
He
doesn't. Using bigotry to get votes.
He reads what he's supposed to believe every day on a card.
No, that was George
I don't
W.
Think
Bush.
That Romney knows what he
and
believes.
Romney.
Mm-hmm. But you're exactly
keep
right.
Changing.
You're exactly right, Bill, about the bearing false witness. However, I would say that we don't hear a lot of that. We have heard the Catholic bishops came out against Paul Ryan's budget, and we've heard some Franciscans who've complained to Mitt Romney about it as well. But that's more on a moral basis. I haven't heard any religious leaders call out any politicians on "Thou shalt not bear false witness" in quite a while. It's a very good point.
Exactly. And another thing, how come there's not more talk about Ayn Rand and the connection with Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was an atheist, and Ryan, I've heard, passed out books to his staff and made them all read it. So,
yes, he did. He you're right, and I thank you for the call, Bill.
Makes all of the interns read it.
He passed out copies of Atlas Shrugged to all of his interns. He bragged about it, and now this year, once he got right before he got the nomination or the nod for vice president, he said in an interview that was an urban legend that he was an Ayn Rand fan. He really respects Thomas Aquinas. It was against personal property, so Paul Ryan. Ryan's a commie. I lay all of this out, and I have a web series.
They don't mean a word of what they say.
They don't mean a word. They want you to hear what they
Everything
hear.
Is strategic.
I actually have a web series called Caffeinated. I do
great,
in L.A. with Maker
show.
Studios.
Yes, you
Thank
do.
You.
Love it.
We have an episode that came out last week about Paul Ryan versus Ayn Rand versus Jesus. If you go on the YouTube and search Paul Ryan versus Ayn Rand or Fugelsang or Caffeinated, you'll find it. But I lay out all the facts about Paul Ryan because you can't worship Ayn Rand and Jesus in the same body. It doesn't work.
No, greed is like we're supposed to be cells in a body.
Mm-hmm.
All your cells are supposed to know what the other cells are doing. They're supposed to be touching and talking and transmitting electrical signals back and forth and sharing fluids and vitamins and blood and oxygen. And when a cell goes from we to me, that's the definition of cancer. That's what a cancer cell does. It starts to isolate and then produce small clusters of its version. And the genius of it is it's brilliant at taking over the host, and then it kills the host it lives on. That's how smart cancer
is. That's the most brilliant thing I have ever heard anyone say ever. You just equated Ayn Randism with cancer. I love it.
It's social cancer.
Brilliant.
And, you know, an Ayn Rand fan is not going to come out and go, you're right. You can't say cancer doesn't know it's cancer like a monkey doesn't know it's a monkey.
Right.
Someone else looks at the monkey and says, oh, that's a monkey. Monkey isn't thinking I'm a monkey all day.
Brilliant. Wow. I'm not going to top that all day. Can we go to Peter in Los Angeles? He's been on hold for a while. Good morning, Peter. Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, thank you, John. Good morning to you and everybody else.
Thank you.
You know, I do want to talk about an encounter I had on Saturday that you will not believe with somebody who lives so far in the bubble. It was incredible. But I did want to comment very quickly on the conventions were two totally different opposites. I mean,
The one with the Republicans was just 3 days of, yes, I did build that, you know, and just attacking. But the Democratic one was just three wonderful days of each person, each speaker talking about all the accomplishments of President Obama.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And there was one loser, though, I thought, at the Democratic convention. That was Anthony Villaraigosa, our mayor here. Mm-hmm. The way he had that big teleprompter problem.
Oh, that was funny.
Yeah.
With that photo showing the speech with the election already
predetermined. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, I did want to talk. I was in a, shall we say, a shopping place. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention the name of it. It starts with a C, ends with O. It's a warehouse type thing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And it rhymes with Mostco. Go on.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I'm a regular customer, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love the place. I was there on Saturday doing some shopping, and I love going in, you know, to those different little stalls they have where they give out for free samples. And I went up to one, and there was this old guy, about, I'd say about, no, I'm 57, so let me just clarify that I'm not saying old people are all like this.
Hey, kid.
He was as concise as you can, Peter. He was late 60s. Anyway, he was late 60s, and first thing I heard out of his mouth, he was just talking to this woman who's behind the counter who's got nothing to do with handling samples, and she's saying, and it's the first words he said. So anyway, there are like something like 357 communists in the White House. And I just went, I thought all of a sudden,
was it Alan West in Costco you're talking about? Did you run into Alan West? Did this guy have a 1991 flat top?
Yeah, I don't know. This guy was just standing there. He just like he even had like a Vietnam cap on. But I thought
he had to use the number 357, right?
Yeah, I was either talking to Alan West devotee or somebody from the Manchurian candidate. You know? But I got talking to him for a few minutes because first thing out of my mouth I said, no, there's not. Uh-huh. And then he said he has documents at home that prove there are.
Of course he does.
Of course he does. Communists in the White House. That's brilliant. That's true.
That guy's got the documents of all the guys.
You know, you know what I say to these people? I say, have you ever met a communist? Try to meet one and ask them what they think of Barack Obama. Ask them what they think of Wall Street bailouts. See what they think. Yeah. If Barack Obama was communist, we would have nationalized the auto company, not given them a loan they paid back in full.
Right. Like our piece we did on
Yeah, there's an upcoming episode of Caffeinated where Rick Overton plays a socialist professor, and I'm interviewing him in a Hannity style about what a horrible socialist Obama is, and Rick keeps saying, no, dude, I'm a socialist. He's not a socialist.
This guy isn't close.
Well, Peter, I thank you for your call. It sounds like you were a real gentleman with someone who was the opposite, and I give you points for not smacking that guy with an oversized package of white shirts in Costco. We're Mitt Romney shops, by the way. What a brilliant thing that the guy who runs Costco, the week after Mitt Romney says he shops at Costco, that the Costco CEO comes and speaks at the DNC. That's fantastic.
Because he bought shirts one time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Three in a package.
But that just goes to show, when you have to go, like, do what you think are middle class or poor things to show you relate to people, that just shows how much you don't relate to people.
I agree.
When you have to go out of your way to say, look, I bought shirts from Costco.
Yeah, like, people that really shop at Costco, they're not talking about it.
You don't have to do it.
That's George H.W. Bush, you know, with the socks. And like, well, it's just a scanner? Oh, my goodness. And it's like you can't avoid revealing yourself. It'd be like watching Mitt Romney try to dance at a Wu-Tang show. It's like, no, don't expose your honkiness more than you already have. Do we have time for another call, Mr. Sorrentino? Let's go to Chuck in Idaho, who's been on hold for a long time. Chuck, you've got a pretty good point about the DNC. How you doing?
Good. Obama is... a guy that I support completely, but, well, not completely. When he's wrong, he's wrong. For the second convention in a row, he lied about coal. There's no such thing as clean coal.
Well, that's true, too.
In both speeches.
Yeah.
And he's evidently in the pocket to the coal, or beholden to the coal industry somehow, but...
There will be some of that. But I also think, you know, that aside, Romney would not... be much different on the matter and probably 10 times
Romney
worse.
Wouldn't devote a single
penny to it. He would deregulate all of it. Right?
I mean, even if clean coal science or technology is a complete myth, I mean, money's being spent on trying to find a way to use coal in a way that doesn't harm our environment.
I understand that, but as the technology exists today, it doesn't exist. And we have to point out our lies when they come up.
I agree.
We have to auto-police.
I completely agree with you, and I respect the point, and I thank you for the call. I want to give you a counterpoint, though. If Barack Obama were to come out and say just wind and solar and alternative fuel, he'd be dead in the water. There'd just be too many forces lined against him. By coming out and saying he supports an all-of-the-above energy policy, while a lot of liberals and conservatives will scorn him for that, what he's doing is guaranteeing hope for wind and solar. because right. he's coming out and saying, I support nuclear, clean coal, I support more drilling, and liberals don't like that he's increased drilling. Conservatives lie about that, by the way. There's never been more oil wells being drilled at the same time ever in history. But because the president comes out and talks this clean coal rap, money will go towards research for wind and solar energy. Because the president adopts this point of view, it helps him get reelected. It's no different from the compromise Bill Clinton made in 96 when he signed the Defense of Marriage Act. Right. It was wrong to do, but if he hadn't done it, you could say there was a chance that Bob Dole could have gotten the White House back in 96, right?
Yeah.
So Bill Clinton had to do a homophobic thing to get reelected to help gay folks a lot more. It's a dirty business politics.
Leadership requires horrific decisions.
Horrific compromise.
And sacrifices, like any general who cries for the boys running out of the trench into the hail. They needed this to get something else done, and who did he, and so it's which kid does Sophie hand over?
Mm-hmm. And so for all this talk of clean coal, and I agree with you, it's a big load of crap, but the fact that the president embraces this all-of-the-above energy policy means that there is more of a future for wind and solar and alternative fuels, and so I understand the compromise, even though I don't like it. Fair enough?
Fair. Look, we're in a philosophical war. It is a throw-down, vicious, cold, many collateral damage numbers on both sides. War, and because we're still living in a modicum of convenience in our world, we don't treat it like a war, but it absolutely is.
Yeah.
And its tenets follow a lot of the same rules.
Mm-hmm. We got to go to break. We'll be back with the final minutes and some very special announcements here on The Stephanie Miller Show. Do not go away.
So, who is responsible for these outrages?
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang. It's Mash Up with Daddy Week on the Steph Show. This is, of course, Queen with Outkast. And what a pleasure it's been having two of my favorite comedians here all day, Trevon Free and Rick Overton, along with Tony Sorrentino. We're here all week, try the veal. By the way, Snopes.com has a great place about how there was a rumor that Obama was selling blueprints for the B-2 stealth bomber to China. That's also a lie. So all of this China stuff is just completely dishonest, and you should ignore it. Thank you. We're here to help. Rick Overton, where can people see you? What are you up to?
I'll be at Comedy Day in San Francisco this upcoming Sunday, September 16th, outdoors, up in the San Fran. So it's a lot of fun. Come on up to Comedy Day. It's in the park.
Rock on. And you're also doing a Sunday night show at the Improv every week, are you not?
This next Sunday, I won't be there because I'll be up at Comedy Day, but they'll have the show.
Okay, brilliant. I actually did your show last night. Trevon and I were both on, Rick Overton and Friends, at the Hollywood Improv.
You did a great job, guys. Killed
it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're on Twitter, finally.
Yeah, you got me on Twitter.
We dragged you into the century.
What's this newfangled gadget contraption?
The tweeter, as McCain called it, the tweeter.
The tweeter, yeah, when he talks to Snooki. By the way, as proud as I was of the DNC, as proud as that made me to be an American, nothing has made me more proud of America than the cancellation of Jersey Shore. You go,
one
USA.
Down,
the actual shore. No, you mean the actual shore.
Oh, the actual shore was canceled, yes. Chris Christie had budget cuts, and he had to get rid of it. Trevon, where can people, first off, read your blog and follow you, and where are you performing?
My blog is on my website, TrevonFree.com, or Trevon Free on WordPress. You can follow me on Twitter, at Trevon, T-R-A-V-O-N, no Y. I'll be in Vegas September 28th and 29th at the Palace Station. What else? The Gentleman's Ranch show on YouTube.
That's a very good show.
And I have a new show called BFD that I'm filming this week that premieres next week on the 19th. Mm-hmm. So that'll be online as well.
Gee, what does that stand for on terrestrial radio?
You have to ask Joe Biden. He'll tell you.
Yeah, Joe knows. Just Google Joe and BFD.
Joe knows.
And, so those are all the things I have going on.
And you're joining me here later in the week.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I'll be back Friday.
terrific. Maybe I can drag Rick Overton back here later in the week, too. We're gonna have some great guests on the show this week, namely Governor Jennifer Granholm. In fact, we got a great comment here. Oh, God, I love her. Where is this? This is my favorite comment of the entire day. I can't find it now, but one of our listeners, I'm sorry I don't have your name, said the real loser of the DNC was Eva Longoria because she had to follow Jennifer Granholm.
Oh, right.
And I should remind all y'all, Jennifer Granholm's excellent show on Current TV is called The War Room. It's on Monday through Friday, and now it's moved to 10 p.m. Y'all have no excuse for missing this. If you liked her speech, you will love her show. It's one of the finest, smartest shows on all of TV. And I know this because I went there and filled in for a week and dragged it down to my level, and I know how capable her staff is. So please check it out. I should point out that Stephanie Miller and Hal Sparks and I will be performing the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour in Seattle at the Paramount Theater on Saturday, I believe it's the 29th of this month. It's the last Saturday of September. I don't have the calendar in front of me. But please come down and see us. We're going to have a special guest, I think. And then we're going to do the Beacon Theater, the very first Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour show at the Beacon October 27th with some very special guests that Stephanie is never going to allow me to reveal before the show. But I'm already very excited because I called in some favors on that one. So look forward to that. I'm going to be performing in Madison, Wisconsin with Hal Sparks at the Barrymore Theater on October 6th. That's going to be a very special Election Eve show. Come see me and Hal in Madison. And I'm doing Laughing Liberally off-Broadway in New York almost every Monday night off-Broadway.
I want to do that show.
You got to come. When are you coming to New York?
As soon as I can.
I just moved, and I finally have a guest room for all my comedian friends, so there's no excuse for you guys.
I'm there. And this I'm gonna be there New Year's Eve.
Okay, come on down. This is for all of you all watching as well, all the viewers. And come crash at my place now. I have room. let's try and get to another call before we go. Molly from Missouri has been on hold for a long time. Molly, how are you? Good morning. Welcome to Stephanie Miller Show.
Hi, I wanted to also take issue as a woman who had children and worked with saying that Ann Romney was a winner during the convention, because she really referenced women as in conjunction to other people, not as their own, not as contributors. She said something about women trying to work less so that they could stay with their kids, and the men working overtime so that they could pay for the kids' supplies and things. And it just really, I mean, she really came across to me as the country club mom, the, you know, the man's world girl's mom, and not at all the I'm a woman, I'm an equal, you know. And also, frankly, kind of insulting to the men of saying, you know, the women are, the moms are important, but the dad's role is not as important. So,
Good point. Good point.
Really bugged me.
They pandered poorly.
Yeah.
They didn't work it out in the office when they were coaching.
Yeah.
They didn't think out all the glitches in it.
Especially when you compare her speech to Michelle Obama's. Like, she made Ann Romney look like a Stepford wife.
Exactly.
How awful the comparison is.
Yeah, it's true. And I thank you for the call, Molly. You're right. You know, I try to find nice things to say about Ann Romney, because as I began the show by saying, she really is a great stay-at-five-homes mom, and and we respect that. I want to say, coming up this week on the Stephanie Miller Show, since you're stuck with me, folks, we're going to have Mr. Hal Sparks joining us. TV's Frank Conniff will be here this week. Governor Jennifer Granholm will be a guest. Rick Unger of Forbes.com is the man who wrote the piece that has set the internet on fire when he pointed out that under President Obama, we've had the lowest growth in government spending since President Dwight Eisenhower. Conservatives hate this guy. Rick Unger is a brilliant guy. He's one of the liberals who goes on Sean Hannity's show and cleans Sean's clock on a regular basis.
Sweet.
Yeah, he'll be on tomorrow. We've also got Charlie Pierce is going to be here. Tina Dupuy. Kelly Carlin, daughter of George, will be joining us for an hour. She's great. And Jimmy Dore.
Jimmy's great.
Reverend Sandy Richards, who was here last time.
Too.
Jimmy's story, great comic. He's on the Young Turks all the time. Dino Badala, a lot of great guests. So you're a darn fool if you don't stay here. I'll be here all week with Tony Sorrentino playing your mashups. And we miss you, Stephanie. We love you. We hope you're having a great time on vacation with our friend Roland and all your posse. And it's going to be a great week. It's a great time to be an American. I want to wish all of you a beautiful day. Have a great Monday and a great week. Thank you for spending this part of your morning with us. We are the Stephanie Miller Show. This is Talking Liberally on Current TV. I'm John Fugelsang. Can't wait for the rest of the week. And be sure to tune in to Governor Granholm's show, The War Room. Once again, it's 10 o'clock. I wouldn't say it so many times if the show wasn't so damn great. Trevon, thank you.
Thank you for having me. I love this show.
Rick, thank you.
Thanks, John.
It's a great way to bring my favorite comedians together and do the Lord's work, huh? All you progressives out there, I want to thank you for all your hard work as well. All you conservatives, we are praying that you'll take the blue pill and get out of the Matrix.
Go vote. Everybody vote.
Yeah, definitely go vote. Local and state elections matter more than anything. For the last time, I'm John Fugelsang. We'll see you tomorrow right here on The Stephanie Miller Show. Our special co-host tomorrow, Frank Conniff, DV's Frank.